Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales
from. Right. Good morning, everybody. We are back. How's it going? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later on. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And it is Tuesday. We're here till 5 a.m. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us. It's been a little while since Jim's been here. He is he writes for Forbes. He writes for Chicago Now. He's got a blog on Chicago Now. Daily Herald he writes for. He writes about music. He goes to see concerts. He interviews a bunch of musicians. And we also are going to play a little music trivia with Jim later on. It's always a lot of fun when Jim is here, and he's right now in the PPG Paints green room waiting to come on into the Allstate Skyline studio. So yeah, PPG Paints green room, and we'll get him in a little bit and bring him in. He'll be live in studio talking music and doing some trivia and all kinds of other stuff. As you know, I'm sure, Doris Day passed away yesterday. She was 97 years old. She was a national treasure, and everybody just loved her. She was so incredibly talented. Great comedian, great actress, terrific singer, star of television, stage, movies, everything. She lived to be 97 years old. And it's interesting because it was just a few weeks ago that I hosted a screening of The Man Who Knew Too Much. And she's so amazing in that movie. She's so, so great in that movie. And also, Que Sera Sera, which became her signature song, was originated and featured in The Man Who Knew Too Much. We had a great time watching that movie on the big screen, and it's just sad that just weeks later she's passed away. She was 97, so she had a nice long life. But again, it's sad. And we'll remember Doris Day. We'll talk about her and her career and some of the movies and TV stuff that she did that was great, and we'll just remember Doris Day, who had a great long life, died at 97. The Simpsons have hit an all-time ratings low. This past Sunday night, they wrapped up its 30th season. The show's been on for 30 years. 30th season, and it had its lowest ratings ever for its 18 to 49 rating with a staggering 0.5. That show was a juggernaut for Fox. And I've said before, between the years of 1992 and 1997, there wasn't a better show on TV at all. And that stretch of like 5-6 years was beyond brilliant, beyond hilarious, and unprecedented, in my opinion. So we're gonna kind of like forget about the way that things are now with The Simpsons and their horrible ratings, even though they have great guest stars. They had Ileana Douglas, Werner Herzog, and Jenny Slate were on. I guess everybody was watching Game of Thrones. I don't know, but the ratings are at an all-time low for The Simpsons after 30 years. But we're going to go back to the glory days, and we're going to talk about the best episodes of The Simpsons, and we want to hear from you guys on that. What are your favorite episodes of The Simpsons? That's coming up, too. So that and more, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you want to jump in here. Though that's what's coming up on the show. Again, it's Two for Tuesday. We'll start playing the Two for Tuesdays after we say goodbye to Jim. When Jim takes off, we'll jump into the Two for Tuesday world. So get your requests in now. Yeah! And that's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. It's also the number for talk and text. And it's also, you can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show, and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is interactive and constantly updated during the show. And that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing good. Very tired from today.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did a lot of interviews yesterday for No Coast Cinema.
Oh, right. And, you posted up some new podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And we had some really, really great stuff talking to some award-winning filmmakers from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a new film that they did their Chicago premiere at the Gene Siskel last night. It's called Still Human. Mm-hmm. And they were on WGN-TV. They talked to me, which was great. So, yeah, you can check that out now on WGNRadio.com.
Oh, all right. Very cool. Been busy. Keeping busy.
Yeah, gotta.
All right. Very, very cool. That's No Coast Cinema. Well, you can check it out at WGNRadio.com. That's Tom's podcast. So in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
I'm doing very well. Feeling great.
Good, good, good. Ready for the Cubs to come back tonight.
Yes, sir.
5:40, nice early evening start.
I think it'll still be going when I wake up. I'll probably be waking up around 7. Should still be going.
Yeah. Well, right, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So we're here now on Tuesday, and isn't it kind of strange, Vic, that just a few weeks ago I hosted this screening of The Man Who Knew Too Much, and now Doris Day passes away. She was a legend. I grew up watching her her TV show and all her movies. I love Glass Bottom Boat in particular. I think that was my favorite. But she made a lot of very, very popular movies. She was America's sweetheart for so many years.
Favorite of my mother's. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think everybody's mother loves Doris Day. And I think everybody, not just mothers, I think everybody loved her.
Did she play the unsinkable Molly Brown at some point in some movie, or am I getting that wrong?
No, I think you're getting it mixed up. Yeah. I mean, she was mostly known for, like, these romantic comedies that she did with guys like Rod Taylor and Rock Hudson.
Yeah,
in that time period, I think Pillow Talk is probably the most popular movie that she was ever in. Roy Leonard used to always have a joke about his lovely wife Sheila, because Sheila didn't like going to the movies and seeing, you know, the kind of stuff that was in movies, you know, like when movies, you know, like R-rated stuff and the stuff that Roy had to sit through, which some of it got pretty rough. And Sheila was not known; she was known not to like that kind of stuff. And Roy would always have this running joke that he would say, and I loved it every single time Roy would say it. He would say, "My wife hasn't seen a movie since Pillow Talk." That was always the one that he went to.
That's great.
Yeah. We'll talk about Doris Day and remember her a little bit later on. We're going to jump into the world of The Simpsons. What are your favorite episodes? They're falling on hard times there. But right now, we're going to grab them from the PPG Paints Green Room, our good friend Jim Ryan, and we are going to talk music. Been a while since Jim's been here, so we're going to catch up on some music stuff, concerts that he's seen, interviews that he's done. We're also going to play a round of Music IQ, a little trivia that we're going to play, and we'll get that going after we take this break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. We'll play them later on. Get your requests in now. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All righty, then. Our friend Jim Ryan, who contributes to Forbes, Chicago Now. You got a blog on Chicago Now, Daily Herald every once in a while and all that stuff. Writes about music, interviews musicians and all kinds of great things, and we have Jim come in. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan and RadioJimRyan.com. And he has just come in from the lovely. Do you like the lovely PPG Paints green room?
I can't get over the fumes every time I'm here, but but yes, I love it. My God,
it's really great. It's a beautiful little room. We spoil our guests here at WGN.
Lavish.
It's incredible. So, Jim, how you been, man?
Good. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad. Been seeing a lot of shows and all that
yes.
stuff. Yes.
Went to one a couple hours ago. So
now,
yes.
Yeah, I want to talk about that and so much more because it's been a while since you've been
out.
So we got a lot of catching up to
do.
If we need to go back a little ways, some concerts that you've seen, because I know you go to a lot of concerts all the time.
Too many.
One of the things that I saw on your Twitter feed sometime back was that you actually got to go backstage and behind at the Chicago Theater.
Oh my God!
Tell me about
that. Have you ever done that?
I've briefly, but I did not see all of the things that you saw.
Okay,
I've been backstage at the Chicago Theater before, but not quite the same way you did.
They do. I now want to take the tour because they do tours. I think like every weekday when there's not a performance, they do a backstage tour of the Chicago Theater. Now I know it's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Every square inch of any flat surface back there, whether it's a stair, whether it's the wall, anything, has been signed by some performer since that place opened in 1921, and they've never painted over it.
It's really incredible.
It's insane, the stuff that's back there. I think my favorite juxtaposition was Marcel Marceau right next to Lauryn Hill. It's insane, the stuff that's back there.
Yeah. No, there's so much history in that building.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you posted some pictures on your Twitter feed. That's pretty cool.
It's crazy.
It's really, really cool looking.
Frank Sinatra in 1986 was the first person who performed there after they rehabbed it.
Yeah.
And he signed the wall, and it's his signature, and right above it says, "Have a great time, I just did."
Wow.
I mean, like, how cool is that?
That's really cool. And I'm sure it goes back. I'm sure if you dig through those, I would imagine Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis are probably
on there.
They've
got to be on there.
Because they played there many, many, many times.
Yeah, I'm trying to think all the current Buck Owens, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, because then you think, like, it's not just music. It's all of the comedic performances and all of the different stuff they've had. It's
and now
insane.
Madonna can sign the wall.
Yeah.
Because she's playing four nights.
That's amazing. And there's room to add a bunch more, too. There's a gap of, like, three dates in that schedule while she's here.
Oh, man.
It might be a full week.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm definitely... There's no way I'm missing
that. How many do you think she could do? Oh, my God.
She could do a month.
That's insane.
But, yeah, it's going to be really special to see her there, man.
That's crazy.
I mean, when I heard about that, I was like, that's...
That's a highlight of the year.
No question.
I never expected her to do a small theater tour like that. She doesn't have to.
No. I mean, she. You know, the last time I saw her was at the UC.
Same here, yeah.
A couple times at the UC, I've seen her at Soldier Field. I mean, those are the kind of venues that she can play.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's going to be exciting.
That's crazy.
The Chicago Theater is beautiful, man. They used to have screenings in the Chicago Theater, but not in the theater.
Okay.
If you would go to the side door in the alley,
okay,
around the side door, you go into the side entrance, there's a rickety old elevator, or at least there was.
Okay.
And this was when it was called the Plitt Screening Room, when Plitt owned many of the Chicago theaters, especially the ones downtown.
Okay.
So when I first started seeing movies with Roy Leonard as a film critic back in like 85, they used to still show movies in the old screening room. So what you would is you would take the elevator up to the 8th floor, okay? And
that's
you would
crazy.
A creaky little elevator, take it up to the 8th floor, you walk around in like the bowels of the upstairs bowels,
sure,
and go down the hallway, turn, and there was a 60 seat screening room.
Oh wow.
Upstairs and inside, you know, the bed. So here's another thing that someone told me. So we would see a bunch of movies there.
Right.
And you know, only about five people could go down at a time in the elevator. Five or six people can go down in the elevator at a time. You didn't feel very comfortable in that elevator.
Yeah,
let me just say that. But you know, you could, what someone told me was, get off at the fifth floor. If you get off at the fifth floor, watch what happens. And I'm like, all right. So I just kind of explored a little bit.
Okay.
Because there's so much stuff. Like you said, there's so much stuff in that building. So I got off at the fifth floor. The elevator door is open. I turn the corner. I'm in the second balcony.
Okay.
You could just walk in.
Empty, dark.
And they were showing a movie.
Oh, wow.
It was Purple Rain. They were showing Purple Rain.
That's
and so I came
too.
In and I was like, I had no idea that this was like, you had access to this. There's this elevator. You can get off in the first, you can get off at the first balcony and the second balcony before you go to the, up to the eighth where the screening room was.
Well, then one of the craziest things that I didn't see this, but people started posting the photo in that stream on my Facebook page. Prince performed there, I think in the early 2000s, maybe.
Yeah.
And they had painted an entire door back there purple. It would, like, in there's all kinds of Prince references on it. And then it all commemorates the run of shows that he had there as well. So everyone's like, did you see the Prince door? I'm like, no. And then people started sending me the photo. I was like, oh my God.
I have not seen the Prince door. But I would love to see the Prince.
Yeah,
door.
I'll show you a picture during break.
So they offer tours,
mm-hmm,
and it's such a beautiful theater too.
I would do that tour in a heartbeat now.
I remember, I mean, but when I started, you know, it was in bad shape, like in 84, 85,
okay,
when I was going to screenings there.
Sure.
And that's where they closed down, and they took a year to completely refurbish it. The first thing that I saw in the new Chicago Theater back in 1986, they did a special premiere of Hoosiers.
Oh, wow.
And they showed Hoosiers as one. And, I mean, and the theater looked immaculate. Like, I went there when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I used to go to all those theaters down in the Loop that don't exist anymore,
right,
basically. And they were movie theaters. And they were kind of grindhouses at that point. Some of them were rough to wear. I mean, the Oriental Theater had a pretty major rodent problem.
Wow, okay.
Like rats crawling across your feet. And, you know, they had seen better days. I mean, these were old theaters built in the 20s and stuff, and I started going there in the 70s. So we're talking theaters that are 50, 60 years old. And, you know, the upkeep wasn't so great.
Chicago Theater was literally doing, like, adult films, right, at one point?
No, the theater next door, The Loop.
Okay.
The Loop was the Loop was doing the porn next door. Yeah.
Next door to the Chicago Theater. Like, I can't even fathom that walking downtown now. It's crazy.
I'm not exaggerating when I say there were 15, 16, 17 theaters within walking distance
in
The
Loop. I've seen some of those photos. Yeah, there were a ton right across the street, right?
It's incredible. Because you had Estate Lake right across the street from the Chicago. The Loop was right next door. The McVickers was around the corner. You had the Woods. You had the Roosevelt. You had the Oriental. And it went on and on, and that's where I grew up seeing movies. I mean, that's the experience that I had was going to these giant movie palaces with my dad every Sunday morning.
I've only seen the photos.
Yeah, and they were huge. I mean, again, like I said, they weren't in great shape in the 70s when I was going, but they started showing movies. They would start showing movies at 9 a.m.
Okay,
and it would go all the way till they'd have a midnight show. So they'd be open from 9 a.m. to 2, and that was very much like what they did in New York in Times Square. In Times Square, a lot of the homeless guys would just go into the theaters and sleep because they were open 24 hours. A lot of the Times Square grindhouses were open 24 hours, and it was very similar to what was happening in the 70s down here in the Loop.
Okay,
with those theaters, they'd be open until all hours, so people would just like go and they'd go to a 24 hour diner and have some coffee, and then go back into the theater and sleep. And you know, but yeah, I can't tell you the number of movies I've seen in those theaters down there and all the memories that I have. But the Chicago Theater is a really, I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful place. I would love to see the tour. I would love to go on that.
I want to take it badly now.
Yeah, I just wandered around in my 20s by myself.
That's crazy,
in the theater,
though.
Just kind of wandering around, taking the elevator up on different floors and getting off and seeing what was happening.
We kind of did that a little bit that day, and that was it was amazing because Rise Against was performing there.
Right,
they were doing a special acoustic performance, so it was a rare small venue thing for them.
Yeah,
and so we got them to do a photo shoot, and then they were performing later that night. But so we got there hours, you know, before,
yeah.
And we were standing, my photographer Barry and I were standing in the hallway looking at this stuff, and Joe, the bass player, comes walking out, and it's rare that you have those moments where the band is just as fascinated by some of this stuff because they're from here.
Yeah.
And
how was the show?
It was amazing. They were great.
Yeah. And what were they were just doing acoustic thing for kicks?
They put out an album called Ghost Note Symphonies at the end of last year, and it's all stripped down, reworked versions of songs from their catalog. So it was kind of this tour, it's a small tour. They only did here, Denver and LA. It was kind of continuing in that theme. Yeah. So stripping the songs down and doing acoustic. They had a cello, a violin, and a stand-up bass player, too. So it was pretty cool. It was kind of like an unplugged performance, basically, because there were stories, too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Pretty unique.
And a great venue.
It was so hilarious because we pitched the idea of doing the photo shoot since they're from here, and it was a cool thing. And my photographer's idea, he wanted to go outside and shoot them on the L platform, on the L stairway, where you could see the Chicago Theater marquee right in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, we don't want to go outside. There's going to be people lined up. And we're like, no. We're like, we took a lap around. And because it's, you know, they're a punk band, there's usually people lined up for a good seat or to get a good standing room spot.
Right.
This was entirely seated, so nobody was lined up outside.
So you got the shot.
We walked them right outside. Up. Nobody cared. It was great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Sounds like a great day, a great night, too.
It was good.
Yeah, cool. Jim, hang on, okay? Jim Ryan is with us. He contributes to Forbes. He goes to concerts. He writes about music. He interviews musicians, and we're going to take a little quiz too, a little bit later on, a little trivia. Are you ready for more music IQ?
We'll see.
Okay. All right. We'll jump in. It'll be Tom's first time playing
jazz.
Yeah. Just be aware that he tends to pull jazz cards on because he's asking you the questions.
Oh yeah.
He used to tend to ask Dan a lot of jazz questions. So.
He excelled too.
He did.
Well, let's see if I can do it.
It's multiple choice, so count. You know. You got a chance. All right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up next. More with Jim Ryan. More music talk after this on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. at 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The Simpsons have hit an all-time low with their ratings. The season finale on Sunday night drew only 0.5 in the ratings. So we're going to go back to the heyday of The Simpsons and talk about our favorite and best Simpson episodes. There are a lot to choose from because there was a time when, like I said earlier, it was the best show on TV, without question. Doris Day passed away. We're going to remember her later on as well. Our phone lines are always open at 312-981-7200. And we're back. Jim Ryan is joining us. He writes for Forbes and Chicago Now with a blog, and Daily Herald. He writes about music, interviews musicians, sees concerts and all that cool stuff. And we have Jim come in to talk music, and we'll play a little trivia later. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we just heard The Who.
We did.
There. And you went to Grand Rapids.
Yes, last Tuesday.
And saw them live on their Moving On tour?
They kicked off their North American tour in Grand Rapids, Michigan, because where else would you kick off?
I was going to say, what?
The only logical
was
choice.
Was Grand Haven taken? So they kicked it off. It's a very, I mean, nothing against Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
I happen to really like Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Very nice, yeah.
But it's odd.
It's a little strange, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it? And they were backed by an orchestra?
Backed by a 48-piece orchestra. So
wow.
With a solo celloist and a solo violinist and a conductor, there were 55 musicians on stage. So it was quite the production for The Who.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
That's crazy.
And then they're here. They're here a week from today. They're Tuesday the 21st in Tinley.
Yeah. Whoa, really? That early in the season? Well, you know, it's not really that early in the season. It just feels like it feels like it's March
at Soldier Field for BTS over the weekend. Trust me, it felt like we were in the middle of winter.
Oh man,
unreal.
So the outdoor concert season has begun. It's underway, even though it's like 46 degrees outside.
Again.
Well, it's supposed to be 80 by Saturday.
Well,
so
great.
That's what we're thinking about for the summer. As we get the, we always talk about the fantastic festivals with you,
right.
Jim, and all the great stories. But you know, The Who. Tom, I don't think Tom knows this. Tom, this man right here.
Wait, this man?
Right here.
Okay.
Jim Ryan, right here, has a voicemail on his phone from Roger Daltrey.
Now, that's just not fair.
And well, I would play it if I hadn't accidentally deleted it.
Yeah, I know you accidentally deleted it. He deleted Roger Daltrey's voicemail. Now, first of all, explain the story, because the story's ridiculous, but explain the story.
Yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment, so I was trying to get him again on this tour and also failed. But he was doing a solo tour backed by an orchestra, which is where this Who idea kind of grew out of. Last summer, he was at Ravinia, and he did that, and I was trying to get him for the Daily Herald, and apparently I got him for the Daily Herald, but nobody told me that I had gotten him, and I was asleep on a Metro train coming back from visiting my parents, and woke up on the train to a voicemail from an unknown number, and I'm like, it can't be, and then sure enough, like, half asleep, I listened to the voicemail, and it's Roger Daltrey explaining to me that he's calling me from Skype because it's clearer and he's able to hear me better, and he'll call back within 5 minutes, and spoiler alert, he did not call back within 5 minutes.
We did play the voicemail on the air,
yeah.
And it was pretty spectacular because it was Roger. There was no mistaking.
Oh, yeah.
It was Roger Daltrey, and I just thought that was fantastic. So you tried to get him for this thing,
yeah, but went up and saw the tour. So
yeah, was it good?
That'll have to suffice. It was fantastic. I think the key with him now too is because the last time they came through town, they were at United Center, and I think it had been canceled and rescheduled and everything because I think he was having some issues with his voice.
Yeah.
So this being opening night, he sounded absolutely fantastic. Hopefully that'll still be the case Tuesday, 2 weeks into the tour. But
he's got to be 70 at least.
I think he's in his mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we were talking about a topic last week, a music topic last week,
okay.
About iconic songs that the actual artists hate.
Okay.
You know, so they talked about how Page and Plant can't stand Stairway.
Okay.
Pete Townsend.
What can he stand? Now I'm curious.
Pinball Wizard.
Okay.
He hates Pinball Wizard. He says it's the worst thing I've ever written.
He was in, like, he occasionally is the curmudgeon, as we know.
Oh, absolutely.
At this point.
Absolutely.
He was full on in that guy's in Grand Rapids because, so he, I guess, so Roger's the one who keeps pushing the tour. Roger doesn't want to stop, and he has to push Pete to do it. And Pete didn't want to do this one unless there was new music. So supposedly there's a new Who album coming soon. Roger just has to put vocals on it, I guess. But
really?
Yeah. So this was kind of the compromise. Pete toured with an orchestra in 2017 doing Quadrophenia.
Yeah.
Roger toured in 2018 doing Tommy with Quadrophenia. They bookended the set with those two albums. But that was how they got Pete to do it, was to try to push it forward and do a little bit different thing. But he's on stage in Grand Rapids at one point, And he goes off in this tangent about how there's just some Who songs that you shouldn't add an orchestra to, that it just doesn't help the song. And the crowd starts booing. And he goes and he raises the hand. He's like, I got another point. And he pauses for emphasis. And he goes, I'm going to substitute the word bad for the expletive he used. I think this is a bad idea Roger had. Actually called it something else. So he was on stage criticizing the idea for the orchestral tour on opening night of a tour that's booked through October. October!
Pete Townsend,
that's
man.
Pete, opening night. He's already not happy.
It's just crazy. Well, what was Roger's reaction when he said that?
The crowd was going so crazy I couldn't hear Roger's reaction, which might be for the best. But they did bring the orchestra back out. It was actually an amazing show because they did. So they started with Tommy with the orchestra. They did a section of songs without the orchestra. They did Won't Get Fooled Again acoustic. Then Pete and Roger did as a duo, just the two of them, which was a highlight of the show, off an album people hate, the 2006 album Endless Wire. Mm. They did a song called Tea and Theater, the two of them together, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
But then they brought the orchestra back out and closed with Quadrophenia.
Yeah. You know, all this, you know, the fact that these two guys are still touring is, one, it's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, really impressive. Two, the fact that they still get to, you know, they actually can stand each other.
I think that's what really struck me about it, is I think that they can actually stand each other.
Yeah.
I think they recognize that.
I mean, they've known each other since they were kids, practically.
But I think they recognize that they need each other. They are, the sum of the parts is better than.
My thing is, John Entwistle was so essential to the sound of that band.
Well, so was Keith Moon.
And so was Keith Moon. No, I agree. But it just seems weird to me that they continue under the banner of The Who. I don't know why. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Half the band is dead. And Entwistle was, Entwistle was one of the greatest bass players that ever lived.
Yeah,
agreed. You know,
to have that rhythm section.
The real me, one of the greatest bass lines in the history of music. And he was just so good, and so was Keith Moon.
Right.
So it's just weird. You know, I'm glad they're still out there, and I'm glad people are enjoying, you know, the music, but it's just, I couldn't go without the other two guys.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know I sound like a curmudgeon, but that's just,
that's not quite as bad as Pete, but.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And it's kind of like when Plant and Page go out together. And like John Paul Jones doesn't.
Right. Yeah, that's always weird to me that they just don't even invite him.
Right. And John Paul Jones.
Pretend he's,
who is the most underrated.
Who's fantastic.
Yeah. I saw Zeppelin twice. The second time I saw him, the only person on stage who wasn't completely annihilated was John Paul
Jones. Okay.
Everybody else was loaded. They played. Page was on a folding chair for most of the show.
Where was that at?
Chicago Stadium. Oh, okay. Old Chicago Stadium. I saw him in 75, and they were fantastic in 75. And then I saw him in 77. And that was a nightmare tour. Like, if you talk to anybody who saw him on that tour, that was Presence. That was a tour for Presence.
Okay.
If anybody who saw him on that tour, you're either going to get, they were really good, or they were absolutely horrendous. They canceled shows. It was a terrible tour.
Okay.
A terrible, especially the American leg, was really, really bad. Yeah, and the night I saw him, you know, normally Plant would come out, and he would break the seal on a bottle of Jack and then start drinking through the show.
Perfect.
That night, he came out, the Jack Daniels was about three-quarters of the way gone already when he came out, and this was at the beginning of the show. And they normally would play close to 3 hours. They played like an hour and 45, less than 2 hours.
Wow.
And because they couldn't even function. And I don't even know what was going on with John Bonham. I have no idea it was him because he was drunk all the time.
All the time, yeah. Well,
but speaking of The Who, you know the story, right, about when years and years ago, obviously it was years and years ago, Keith Moon was still alive, so it was Keith Moon actually thought it would be a good idea to take a couple of horse tranquilizers before a show.
I don't think I know
Oh, you don't know this story?
I like where
okay,
it's going.
This is a true story. True story. And I can't remember. It was in America. I can't remember what city. Obviously, it was in the 70s. And so he thought Keith Moon was like, I'm going to take some horse trank before the show.
Perfect.
So
what could go wrong?
He takes somebody. But they're like a song and a half in, and he passes out. They think he's dead.
It hits.
Okay, boom. He's out like a light. This is about a song and a half into the set. And there's thousands of people in the stadium, and so they carry Keith Moon's body off the stage. They prop him up in a chair in the back, and then Pete Townsend says, "Can anybody play drums? Anybody in the house is a drummer?" And this kid, who's like 19, 20 years old, is like, and he's near the front. He's like, "Yeah, I can play drums." They bring him up on stage. This kid plays with The Who. He plays a concert with The Who.
That's fantastic.
Because Keith Moon thought horse tranquilizers would be a great, you know, pre-dinner mint.
Keith was having an off night.
Oh, my God. You ever hear the stories of them? Of him?
Oh, of Keith. Keith
and Oliver Reed? Like, when he used to hang out with Oliver Reed, you know, the British actor Oliver Reed? Notorious drunk. And one of my favorite people that... There's this great... Let me just recommend this book. And I recommend it for you, too, Tom. It's called Hellraisers. It's one of my favorite behind, you know, the scenes Hollywood books ever written. I had the author on. It's unbelievable. And it's about the incredible drinking adventures of Richard Harris, Richard Burton, Peter O'Toole, and Oliver Reed.
Okay.
And it's unbelievable. The stories that are in this book. And there's a whole section of Oliver Reed just tearing stuff up with Keith Moon because they were really close friends. And they it was just those two guys. I mean, there's one story where O'Toole and Richard Harris, who were like really close.
Okay.
O'Toole and Richard Harris are in a pub and they want to close. The pub is like, we're going to close. We're closing. And they're like,
but we're not ready yet.
No. So they bought the pub. They bought the pub. And then
luckily, the title was, the deed was on hand.
Well, they bought the pub. So they buy the pub so they can stay there all night and booze some more.
Oh, my God.
And then, you know, they were staying at O'Toole's, like, summer cottage or whatever, outside of Dublin. And so they go back to his house. They go to sleep. They wake up and they go,
Did we buy
a pub last night? And then they went back to the pub and they reneged on the deal. And the owner was like, it's fine, you know. So, but they actually bought it. We want to continue drinking. Like, they couldn't go home and drink.
Oh, my God.
That's just one of the, I'm telling you, this is just one of the many. This book is called Hellraisers. One of the most entertaining reads I've ever had.
Where are they at with the movie? Hasn't that been kind of Roger Daltrey's pet project now for a while?
With the Keith Moon movie?
Did he want a Keith Moon, like,
biopic? Oh, that's been in the works for a long time. I don't know what's going on.
I'll have to look.
That would be great. Who would you get to play him?
To play him, yeah, I don't even know. That's...
I mean, who?
Yeah,
someone who's insane enough to play
Keith Moon to embody that character.
If anybody has any suggestions, what do you think?
Nicholas Cage.
He's too old.
Well, he's insane, though.
Oh, we could do some de-aging. Yeah. Come on.
What was he? Keith Moon died in his 30s, right?
Yeah. Did he even get that far?
Yeah, maybe late 20s, early. I think it was early 30s. I think he died in his early 30s. But I'm trying to think of somebody who could play him. Doesn't necessarily have to be British. He could be American.
I want a method actor who's
going to take horse trank on the set.
Daniel Day-Lewis in his returning role.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
All right. Well, we're going to break here. When we come back, we got a lot more music to talk about with Jim. And you mentioned just briefly in passing that you went to see BTS. So we'll have to talk about that. All right. More with Jim Ryan and music here on 720 WGN right after this. It's my favorite kind of music. It's K-pop. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking music with our good friend Jim Ryan. He contributes to Forbes. He's got a blog on Chicago Now. He writes for the Daily Herald. Covers the music scene, sees concerts, interviews musicians, and joins us every once in a while to talk music. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I told Jim, Tom, I'll tell you this story at some point, but I told Jim another great Richard Harris, Peter O'Toole story off the air during the break.
Yes.
During the break, which is classic. And also one of the greatest.
I'm going to need to read that book,
One of the greatest theater stories of all time.
Hellraisers.
Just to make sure, this is Richard Harris, like... Harry Potter, Richard Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Dumbledore getting crazy.
Oh, listen, man. back in the day, notorious souse, Richard Harris. Notorious. And he and Peter O'Toole were like best friends. But yeah, that's Dumbledore. He was Dumble drunk.
I love it.
But that's Richard Harris. And one time, Richard Harris, just another quick Richard Harris story, real quick. They're at the Oscars, okay? And this is when Unforgiven was up for all the Academy Awards.
Okay.
And so some bonehead on the red carpet who clearly didn't do her homework, you know, was like, you know, doing the basic, you know, right. red carpet. Hey, this event, is it
fun?
Who are
you wearing?
Yeah, all that crap. And Richard Harris couldn't care less about that. He wanted to get to the bar as soon as possible. And so, actually, I think this was during one of his sober stretches, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe, no, he was drunk. So, so she's asking him a question, and she goes, so, who are you rooting for tonight? And he kind of looks at her like, is there any film that you're rooting for tonight? And he just kind of looks at her like, are you seriously asking me this question? And she's like, yeah, I'm curious, what movie? And he goes, do you know that I'm in The Unforgiven? And she goes, and then he starts swearing and they cut away. But she didn't even know he was in Unforgiven. And this woman is asking him, hey, who are you rooting for tonight?
Oh, man.
Yeah. I also love the story with Burt Reynolds on the red carpet with the horrible remake of Longest Yard.
Okay.
The Adam Sandler remake of Longest Yard, which is horrifying.
I have not watched that.
The original is fantastic. The original is one of my favorite Burt Reynolds movies ever. So Burt Reynolds is in The Longest Yard. He plays one of the coaches in the remake. He's also in the Adam Sandler remake. So a small role, but he's in it. And so he's being interviewed on the red carpet by some guy. The guy says, are you excited that you're in the film? He's like, yeah, I'm very excited about it and everything. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, did you see the original? Burt Reynolds asked the guy, did you see the original? He goes, this is a remake? Burt Reynolds slapped the guy.
End to that story. Burt slapping someone
because they didn't know that the Adam Sandler version was a remake of his movie.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Man. Do your homework if you're going to interview Burt.
Burt of all people.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Burt slapping people.
Okay, so BTS. Tell everybody what the deal is here.
Again, I go to this stuff so you don't have to. right. So K-pop, like, how does that become this cultural phenomenon?
I don't know. And I've seen some of these groups perform, and it's not like they're untalented. I mean, the choreography is really amazing.
Yeah,
they've got charisma.
The live show is a spectacle.
Yeah. I just don't know how it happens. Yeah,
I can't explain it.
Yeah.
And every kid that I talk to at Soldier Field or that I come across who is a fan of K-pop has the exact same answer. Where did you get exposed to this? Would you care to guess that answer?
No.
YouTube.
YouTube. Oh,
every
sure.
time. YouTube is the answer.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I'm just blown away. It's not radio. There is no MTV. It's not, you know, the new way kids get exposed to this stuff is YouTube.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing, but
now, so they were at Soldier Field.
Yeah, at Soldier Field, a lot of the songs aren't even in English.
Yep.
I think only three members of the group even speak English fully.
I saw them on SNL.
Okay.
They did SNL.
Yeah, they were just on. I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah.
But not a single musician on stage. I think everything was a track. If there were musicians, they were not present.
They were not seen.
We could not see them.
Right.
I would be dubious how many live vocals I was even hearing in a thing like that.
Yeah.
But they stretched it out over 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 45 degrees and raining at Soldier Field. It was quite something, Nick.
Over 2 hours?
Yeah. It was nuts.
Man, man.
It's very rare anymore that I go to a concert and I really wish that I had earplugs. I know I should wear them. I go to a lot of concerts that I have for a long time. I should be wearing earplugs. But it's rare that I have a moment where I go, this is really loud. This is brutal. I wish I had earplugs, especially outdoors.
Yeah.
The screaming was so off the charts insane during BTS that I did wish I had earplugs.
I'll tell you what. I saw Duran Duran in 1985 on the Seven and the Ragged Tiger tour at the Rosemont Horizon.
Okay.
I've been to a lot of loud concerts.
Yeah.
I've seen Metallica. I've seen Slayer. I've seen, you know, Motorhead.
Sure.
I've been to a lot of loud concerts. That was the loudest concert I've ever been to
because
in my life.
Screaming?
Because of the screaming.
Yeah.
And to make up for the screaming, they had to crank the music. And it was non-stop screaming. Like, it wasn't like they screamed a little bit and calmed down.
That's how this was.
Non-stop. At a decibel that could shake the earth. Mm-hmm. It was just women screaming and the music trying to top it. Girls screaming and the music trying to top it.
I couldn't believe it was that loud outside.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, I'll tell you, seriously, that was in... I love the show because I love Duran Duran.
Right, yeah, I mean,
but,
me too.
But my God, I mean, that was at the height of their popularity.
I think the only thing I've seen with the screaming that could compare to it... Well, my first concert was Michael Jackson, but I don't remember the level of the screaming.
Yeah.
But Ed Sheeran at Allstate Arena. Because it's a young crowd. And it's all kids, and the screaming was just absolutely insane.
Oh, my God. I don't know why I find that so weird.
No, I know. That's everybody's reaction when I've told them that.
By the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. So overall, I guess the kids were entertained.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, it was, I mean, all your trappings of the rock show these days, your pyro, your streamers, your confetti, your fog, all of that was there. So, I mean, it was quite a spectacle.
Yeah.
Stage was set up in the north end zone with a runway running out to about the 50-yard line, and it was a giant B stage in the middle of the field.
Wow.
When they brought dancers out, there had to be 30 people on stage. If the Who was 55, I would estimate BTS at like 30.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, it was something. I mean, it's a spectacle. Everybody I talked to focused on the fact that the lyrics are positive and that they're happy their kids are gravitating to this as opposed to some other stuff that's out there.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
So it's cool, right?
That's cool. No, hey, God bless them,
that's,
man.
You know, that's where I was at.
The kids like them. Well, I'm just imagining a lot of parents going, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, like just kind of stand.
I've never seen shorter beer lines or men's bathroom lines ever at a concert than I did at BTS. So it was great for me.
You had access to the beer. That's all you cared about. I got to get beer and pee with no hassle.
It was perfect.
Oh, man. But I'm just picturing, like, you know, a bunch of dads going, oh, God. You know, like, just like rubbing their heads going, oh, man.
Yeah, my cousin was at that concert.
Is that right?
Yeah, but luckily she had some older girls to take her. So my Uncle Pete was just like, all right, meet me at this gate.
Right. I'll pick you up. I'm not going in, but that's it. All right. All right. We're going to break here. Hang on, Jim, okay? More music talk with Jim Ryan. We're going to play a round of Music IQ with Jim and Tom and myself, and more. Real quick here, the news is up right after this. Witness the majesty of Entwistle. You guys ever hear the Wasp cover of this?
No.
What?
Wasp, the heavy metal band from the
80s. Yeah.
They did a cover of The Real Me, and it's not bad. I'm serious.
All right.
Blackie Lawless?
Vic is laughing in the newsroom.
Is that Blackie Lawless?
Blackie Lawless, man. Wasp.
Oh,
they did a cover of The Real Me, and I was like, it's not bad.
Wow, that's shocking, actually.
Well, that's a little nugget that you guys can take with you this morning. That's Nick DiGilio. We're back here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Jim Ryan is with us, and we're talking music. Did you find it? All right, here it is. This is Wasp.
I thought that was going to be worse.
I'm telling you, man.
It's the vocal performance that makes it.
Yeah, as soon as you hear Blackie Lawless's unmistakable voice.
He makes anything better.
I tell you, man, my friends and I, you know, because back in the 80s, we used to mock all the hair bands and stuff. And Wasp was one of the bands that we used to mock. You know, I mean, because they had an EP that was titled I Blank Like a Beast. And there was the cover of the album was a crotch with a jigsaw blade sticking out of it with blood all over it. That was the very subtle cover of it. And we just found Wasp endlessly entertaining, my friends and I did. And then suddenly they come out with that, and I'm like,
this isn't that bad.
This is actually pretty good. I was like,
this isn't what we expect from Wasp.
No, I don't expect that from Wasp. I don't expect a pretty decent cover of The Real Me from Blackie Lawless and Wasp. It's like, what? But I like it.
That's not bad.
All right, we're back. Jim Ryan is here. A couple of texts have come in. Keith Moon died in the same house, same bed that Mama Cass did, and it was someone's famous house. I don't know if that's true. Is that true?
I've been trying to find some reputable sources to say this.
Yeah.
But
I can't prove that yet. I don't know.
It would be very eerie.
It would be weird. 708 area code says, I've heard the bootlegs from the Led Zeppelin 77 tour, and Nick's right. Either firing on all cylinders or total helter-skelter.
So they're the replacements. Before the replacements.
Right. Jimmy was so out of it between songs, he'd asked Robert how the next song went. And that info came from their lighting and sound guy.
Yeah, perfect.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Having seen that tour, doesn't surprise me at all. 312 area code says, James McAvoy or Taron Egerton could play Keith Moon. They look crazy enough.
Okay.
Taron Egerton, he's locked into Elton John, so that's
it's more than just a look, though. It's got to be a mindset.
Yeah, McAvoy is one of my favorite actors on the planet, so
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see McAvoy doing anything.
Yeah,
I love him. He actually made me like an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I liked Split. I hated The Glass, but I liked Split until the final scene. I thought Split was great until the final scene when he let us know that it was a sequel to Unbreakable, and I went, oh god!
I threw a shoe at the screen because I was at an employee screening.
Yeah,
and I said to the guy next to me, I was like, I swear to God, if Bruce Willis shows up at the end of this, and he did, and so I threw my shoe.
I couldn't. I mean, I hate all of M. Night Shyamalan's movies. I hate them all, and I'm including The Sixth Sense.
Not a big fan of Lady in the Water.
Not a fan of Lady in the Water, even though Paul Giamatti's like one of my favorite actors of all time. But no, none of them. I don't like any of them. The Happening, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. Airbender, Last Airbender, good Lord. But anyway, so Split comes out. McAvoy is one of my favorite actors. I go see Split, and I'm like, oh man, I'm actually enjoying this. And most of it, 80% of the reason I like that movie is because of McAvoy. And Anya Taylor, why am I blanking on her last name? Anya Taylor from The Witch. Anyway, she was great in it, too. So anyway, but yeah, I mean, I can see McAvoy playing Keith Moon. He's nuts. All right. Hey, you know, you've often covered Dave Davies.
I have.
Yeah, and he played City Winery.
Yeah, that's a small venue for him on Easter Sunday, no less.
Oh, he played on Easter Sunday.
It was Easter Sunday, yeah. Dave Davies at City Winery, and you know he had the stroke four or five years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So he doesn't play as lightning fast as you might expect, but he still plays very well, and especially on some of the slower moments where he can really dive into kind of a distortion drenched psychedelic solo.
Yeah,
those moments were pretty fantastic. So not so much, the big Kinks hits, which closed the show. But some of those slower moments where he could really get into it, he was quite effective.
On Easter Sunday, was there a crowd?
It was pretty packed. Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'd say cool. It was almost full.
Yep. You've interviewed him too, right?
I've never interviewed him. I would love to interview Dave Davies. And I guess him and Ray have.
I was going to say, just first question, how's Ray?
Well, so he made a joke at one point. He did a Kinks song. I can't remember which one it was, and he made the comment. He's like, "This is my favorite Ray Davies song," and the crowd went crazy. And he's like, "Yeah, give it up for Ray Davies, but not too crazy." that was literally his reaction. But I guess they're working on a new album. Apparently,
is that right?
Supposedly,
wow.
That's because he kind of addressed it on stage, and I was like, "What? I didn't know this." And Googled it, and sure enough,
they're working on a new album.
Recent headlines, that say there's a new Kinks album
coming. That's pretty cool.
That is interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, City Winery, I really like that place.
Yeah, it's a unique environment to see a show.
It is.
For sure.
Yeah, I saw Steve Earle there.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
I saw him twice there.
I saw him, earlier this year.
Yeah.
Beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, beginning of the year, and he's coming back, too.
Talia Hall, maybe?
Talia Hall. And I know he's right? doing, like, you know, he did a residency at City Winery.
At City Winery, yeah. He did. He's done it a couple years in a row now, two in January, two in February.
He loves that place.
Yeah.
Because I know him through Tony Fitzpatrick, so I've met Steve Earle. He's one of my favorite artists of all time.
I love Steve Earle.
So I've gone backstage a few times and met Steve, and he's a really very, very cool guy, but he loves City Winery. He loves this city, by the way. Like, this is, he talks about Chicago like it's, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of fans in this city. Chicago loves Steve Earle and always has. And, you know, he says that the support that he gets from this city is mind-boggling, which is why he comes back here all the time. And plays so frequently, you know.
I would love to sit down with him and pick his brain about Treme stories.
Oh man, yeah,
I love him on that show.
I do too, man. The last time I talked to him about Treme, but I mostly pick his brain about The Wire.
Okay,
because it's
my God, yes, jeez, I didn't even think of that. Yeah,
No, it's all about The Wire, and he performed Way Down in the Hole too for season two, I believe was his version of Way Down in the Hole for the opening the opening credits.
That's awesome.
Of The Wire. So, speaking of the City Winery,
yeah,
former Tonight Show band leader,
yes,
Kevin Eubanks.
Yeah, he was there.
Did you get to interview him?
I did interview him.
So what was that like?
He's fantastic. We talked a little bit about how that 22 years, does that sound right? I think that's what it was, him.
Seriously?
Well, he was in the band with Branford. before he took it over.
Oh, right. I totally forgot that Branford was the leader of the band.
But he was in it that whole time.
Oh, I totally forgot.
It's something crazy. I think it's pretty close to 20 years that he was involved with Jay in The Tonight Show. And then, and of course, when he took over, you know, it, kind of in a role Branford never really warmed to, was kind of the sidekick role.
Right. And yeah, Branford was not a sidekick.
No.
No.
But Kevin kind of embraced that.
He did. He was my favorite part of the show. Whenever I would tune, the only time I would ever watch Leno is if, like, the only time I ever watch Fallon or Corden is when they have somebody I really, really like on as a guest.
Okay.
Because otherwise, and then when I do watch, the monologue gets fast-forwarded through, I get right to the just get right to the interview, and that's it. And any of the bits, you know, they fast-forward right through all that stuff. But whenever I would watch Leno back in those days, I would watch because of the guests, and he was always my favorite part of the show. I always thought Kevin Eubanks was the best part of the show.
We talked about what it was like to, for him to kind of warm to that role as sidekick, and then for him musically to be exposed on a nightly basis to all the different kind of music he was and how that kind of, you know, impacted him as an artist. But his big thing is music in the classroom. He grew up with a music education from, you know, grade school through high school, and then he went to, I believe it was Berkeley. He had that music education the whole way through, and we live in a time where that's kind of disappearing, the whole music and arts from the curriculum. So he's extremely passionate about that. He does a lot of teaching, so he was, we talked quite a bit about that.
And
that, to me, that's always one of my favorite things to speak to people about, because I grew up with that, too. I had music and arts in grade school.
Yeah.
Not in high school, but in grade school, I definitely had it, and I think there's a lot of benefits to it.
I agree. I totally agree.
Outside just
learning
music.
He's also a really, really talented musician.
Really? He's a guitar player, and, you know, he hates when he's classified as a jazz guitar player because he feels he's, you know, so capable of playing so many different styles of music. He doesn't want to be pigeonholed, which I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, he was great.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool. Hey, by the way, so did you see the Wax Trax movie?
I have not seen the movie yet. I got to see the movie.
Yeah.
I saw Ministry.
That's where I was going. But you
that's
did
a favorite
see,
of yours.
You
and
did
I.
See Ministry
at House of Vans.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, it's a small place for them. First of all, I mean, it only holds a couple of hundred people. You know, an event space in the West Loop, and it's free. All of their events are free. You just have to register online and then, you know, show up. It's first come, first serve. But they were doing a Wax Trax set. Ministry was. It was a screening of the movie followed by a panel discussion. And
I had Planet of the Sound,
John Lord.
Yeah, John Lord, Planet of the Sound. I had him on for Record Store Day.
Okay,
and we were talking about then he was given, you know, like the first people in line would get tickets to see the movie and go to the after concert.
It was so I missed the screening because I was over at Star Wars Celebration.
Star Wars Celebration was the same,
time.
Yeah.
So I was over there during the day and then went over there for the Ministry set, and they did the 80s and 90s Wax Trax stuff that, by and large, Al makes a concerted effort not to play ever.
Right.
They closed with Every Day is Halloween.
No!
Yes.
They did?
They broke it out.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And he was very upset about it. Of course he was. He's like, we just started playing this again. You know, I guess seeing as how we get the movie thing.
I'm sure he's thrilled. I'm sure he's absolutely thrilled that they re-released the 1982 This Is Ministry EP, which came out before With Sympathy. I'm sure he's absolutely thrilled about that.
Oh, so. He's an interesting character, isn't he, Al Jorgensen?
Yeah. He spit at my friend. I know.
I love this story.
What the hell happened after that first album?
He
spits at him. That's a little rude, my friend Joe says. Joe would have been very, my friend Joe passed away, but he would have been very thrilled that they closed with Every Day is Halloween. Because that's still a tolerable song, according to him. Wow. All right. Well, that must have been something. Small venue.
It was something. All right.
How'd Al look? Did he look good? Is he all clean cut now?
He looks wonderful. Yeah. I mean, as you know, Al Jorgensen in his 60s, you know, you would assume
Yeah. Suit, tie, short hair.
Exactly. Designer everything.
All right. All right, let's take a quick break, Jim, and then when we come back. You saw Johnny Marr last night.
I did.
We got to talk about that.
He was outstanding.
We have to talk about that. And then after 2:30, stick around because we're going to play a little Music IQ.
Okay.
All right, cool. More music talk here, and if you want to jump in with a talk or a text, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. What the hell happened after that first album? There it is. There he is, Al Jorgensen, everybody. I'm sure Al is listening right now going, why the hell are you playing that song? Aren't you playing The Land of Rape and Honey? What's the matter with you?
The question is, why are you playing that song, Al?
Oh, man. Yeah, Ministry played at a post-screening of the Wax Trax movie, which I've not seen. I really want to see it. I'm very excited to see it, too.
It's Jim Nash, who owned the store, his daughter Julia directed it, and she was there that night, and it was really cool.
I used to go to that store all the time.
That was a little before my time in the city. Growing up in the suburbs.
Anytime I go to the Biograph Theater, boom.
Oh, yeah, right next door, right? Yeah.
So, that's Ministry, and we're not talking about Ministry. Al Jorgensen. But we do want to talk about Johnny Marr.
Yeah.
Where did he play?
He was at the Vic.
He was at the Vic, okay.
He showed up, right?
He's the guy who actually shows up, right? From the band?
Unlike other members of the Smiths, Nick.
Does he eat meat? Does Johnny Marr eat meat? Does he restrict meat from being anywhere near the vicinity?
He's everything you want in the Smiths member. As opposed to the other guy.
Well, tell me about it. I saw the fantastic pictures that you took.
I mean, he does. Thank you. Yeah. The only thing I was missing was a thumb in the corner. he does, he does a lot of Smith stuff. So he's really grown into the role of frontman, too. I mean, he's up there preening and posing and really hamming it up in every rock star style imaginable. But he's fantastic. I interviewed him, too, last month, and he's wonderful. Like, he in all of the prep I was doing, it became very apparent that he's really good friends with Noel Gallagher.
Oh, wow.
And it's very strange. He's only, like, 3 years older than Noel Gallagher. You would think there'd be a bigger gap between the two of them, but they're both in their 50s. He's still pretty young. But I totally understood after getting off the phone with him how the two of them get along as well as they do, because they have the exact same outlook. Neither of them gives a crap about anything.
Yeah.
Johnny Marr is very much cut out of that same cloth as Noel Gallagher.
Yeah.
But his new album, Call the Comet, is fantastic. He's upset with Trump. He's upset with Brexit. He doesn't address either one of them directly.
Right.
It's him imagining his utopia where values matter, and he picks who gets to join. But so that's the concept of his new album, is Johnny Marr's utopia.
Yeah. He was always my favorite part of the Smiths.
He's
great.
He's such a fantastic guitar player.
Amazing.
Out of that generation of guitar players, he's right up at the top for me.
No question.
He's got such a unique style, and you hear it in all of the different stuff that he's done before the solo albums, because he's only put out 3 solo albums, but he was a member of the Cribs, and those albums are great, and he was on a Modest Mouse album, and he's done all this different stuff. He did 2 songs at the Vic last night by Electronic, his group with Bernard Sumner from New Order.
Yeah.
It was one of the, he called it a disco song from Manchester, was how he prefaced it, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, he just does so much cool stuff.
Is it a big tour?
He's doing a full U.S. tour, yeah. And then he's been in town for a couple of days, because I saw on social media he was watching soccer at the Globe on Saturday.
Of course he was.
Park,
yeah, of course he was.
And just hanging out with fans, yeah.
The one day I decided to not go watch soccer at the Globe.
Yeah.
God.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's if you're going to watch soccer anywhere in this city, that's the place
to
go.
That's the place to do it, right? Yeah, yeah. With Johnny Marr.
I used to work for the guy who ran the Globe.
When it was...
He's at A.J. Hudson's now, which is at Irving and Ashland.
Right.
And that used to be Ginger's Ale House. I bartended there, and I used to hang out there. Jamie Hale is the guy who runs that place. He went to the Globe, and he's the one who turned it into the soccer bar.
Well, I remember the Lion's Den, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the Lion's Den, right?
Yeah.
The punk bar?
And he turned it into the soccer bar that it is now.
Okay.
And he brings that, you can go to A.J. Hudson's, too, and watch a ton of soccer.
Oh, yeah, but it's a Liverpool bar, so no.
Yeah, it is a Liverpool bar. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Can you tell him to stop that? Yeah.
I can't tell him anything, quite frankly. But no, I can't tell you the number of times that, and I'm not even a big soccer guy at all, but... I can't tell you the number of times I serve drinks there at like 8 o'clock in the morning for guys watching soccer, I mean, because of the, obviously the time difference, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, bang, bong, bing. These guys are down in pints and watching soccer. And so I was a part of that scene for a while when I worked at Ginger's. And I've been to the Globe several times, and it was voted, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Globe was voted best soccer bar in America.
Wow. That's high praise.
I think it was voted best soccer bar in America.
Nice.
And what's the allegiance at the Globe?
I don't know.
It used to be Liverpool because Jamie ran the place for a while. So
you know, it's been a minute ever since I started doing the overnights.
Oh, right.
I have a trouble getting up really early in the morning, so I'm just taping the games, watching them at home.
Right.
So I don't know what their specific allegiance is.
Well, Johnny Marr's a Manchester United guy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, which is a
shame, Manchester.
Really. So then they're probably a Manchester
bar,
right?
That's what I'm wondering, yeah.
Yeah, unless that's the only place he really went to
just watch soccer. Yeah,
he didn't do any research on any other Manchester bars in the city. So, all right. Well, Johnny Marr played last night. Very, very good. Was it a better experience than BTS?
It would be hard. I mean, there were musicians on stage. there was a plugged-in guitar. So
really?
That right off the top, I'm happy.
There you go. All right. All right, Jim, hang on. We're going to take a break. We got the news, and after the news, we're going to play a little Music IQ. We'll explain what that is, and Tom's first time playing it, so we'll see how that goes. We'll see how many jazz questions. By the way,
I
want you to know, Tom, I want you to know that Jim was looking directly at me when he randomly picked the cards, so he did not, this was not like...
And there are no jazz questions, so go figure.
He looks at the cards already. Okay, there you go.
Thank God.
All right, okay. Well, take a break. There might be a BTS question in there somewhere, though. All right, the news is up after this. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're going to go back to the heyday of The Simpsons and talk about the best episodes ever. What are your favorite Simpsons episodes? And we want to do that because we want to spin a real negative, because the season finale, sadly, of The Simpsons, which is a show that just finished its 30th season, was a 0.5 in the ratings. The lowest ratings that a Simpsons episode has ever had. So we want to go back and think about the good times that The Simpsons had. And there was a stretch, like I've said, between around 1992 to 1997 when there wasn't anything better on television. So we're going to sift through the best episodes. What were your favorites? We'll talk Simpsons. And also, Doris Day passed away yesterday. So we're going to remember her and talk about her career and all that stuff. She was great. So right now, though, Jim Ryan is hanging out with us. Thanks for sticking around, man.
My pleasure.
And Jim is a contributor to Forbes and Chicago Now and Daily Herald. And when did you start writing for all these places?
Chicago Now was 2011. Daily Herald was, I think, 2015. Judas Priest interview was my first piece. So
fantastic.
There you go.
Got the Halford?
I didn't get Halford. I got the drummer. Ian Hill.
Ian Hill. Okay. No KK Downing?
Nope.
Okay.
And then Forbes, just about a year. It'll be a year June 1st.
All right. Very cool, man. And you keep busy doing all that music stuff, too.
I do.
Do you still do traffic anywhere?
No. I'm done.
You know, he's a traffic guy. You actually filled in a bunch of times on my show.
Yeah,
you did
yeah.
traffic during my show when when I had a traffic person.
When
I had the lovely Esmeralda Leon.
That's right.
And you did traffic for TV as well.
I did, yeah. I did some helicopter, but no.
Right, no, and neither is Esmeralda. Esmeralda's not doing that either. Makes me sad. I miss her. I miss her terribly.
Well, she's a wise woman.
She's an amazing woman. She's fantastic. And added, we got to get her back on the show, mm-hmm. Tom. Let's book her. Let's get her in here soon.
Oh, she's busy, but I've got a way.
Okay, cool. Ways. Good. All right. So whenever you're on here, we play a game called, it's a little board game that I have with some cards.
Yes.
Some trivia questions on them. And it's all encompassing. It's different kinds of genres and different kinds of styles and of music. And it's called Music IQ.
Yes.
So here's how it works. We'll start on the red side. Okay? Start on the red side. Because there's two sides. One side is colored red on the card. The other side is colored sort of black, dark. But we'll start with the red side. And we will start out where I will read a question to you, Jim.
Yes.
And Jim, you will read a question to Tom.
Yes.
And then Tom will read a question to me.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
And we'll go round robin. Whoever has the most questions correct wins a Ford.
Perfect. I could use an upgrade on my 03 Honda.
Now, it takes me a little. You have a 2003 Honda?
CD player.
God bless you, man.
Doesn't even have an aux cord.
How many miles on?
206,000.
Good for you.
There you go.
Right. You know, we have a listener who just turned over his Honda to a million.
A million?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
what
our buddy,
year?
Our buddy Doc. What year is it? It's like 2003. It's a 2003, 2004.
I feel good about that, then.
No, well, he drives a lot.
apparently.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my God.
Okay. You ready?
Yes.
All right. Now, I just want you to be aware. You know this already. Tom, you don't know this already. I have to use readers because my eyes are almost 54 years old.
Yes.
And this font is extremely small. You guys have to admit that, especially the little, tidbits that they put in there. So it might take me a little while to get these out. All right, Jim, are you ready?
I am.
All right. Okay, now this is just not fair.
is it a jazz question?
No. This is a question that doesn't require any kind of thinking.
Well, that's what Tom's going to get next. So.
Okay. How many beards are there in the group ZZ Top?
Two.
That's exactly right. You didn't even need the number. Because it was three, four, or two. There aren't four people in ZZ Top.
And the guy who doesn't have the beard is named?
Beard.
Beard.
That's right. And that's the little tidbit.
There you go.
Nice.
All right, one for Jim. All right.
All right, Tom, I got a brain buster here for you.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Which group's guitarist is known as The Edge?
Come on, man.
Oh, wow. That's a real...
Do you want the multiple choice?
You know, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah,
just give me the multiple choice. Yeah, I want to.
Is it Kiss? Could it be the Rolling Stones? Or is it U2?
I'm going to say U2.
Yeah.
The Irish band with lead singer Bono has won more Grammy Awards than any other. Is that true?
Really?
Wait, than any other Irish band? Is that what they're saying?
Probably.
This Irish band with lead singer Bono has won more Grammy Awards than any other
Irish band. It's got to be, right?
Yeah. I don't think the Dubliners have won that many Grammys.
Yeah, or Sinead.
Yeah. It's got to be, right?
I would think. I mean, I can't imagine.
I can only think Thin Lizzy deserves more, but that's just me.
Agreed.
All right. First thing I did when I got to Dublin, checked into the hotel, nearly ran to Phil Lynott's statue.
Well, I didn't do that when I was there.
Dude.
Where's the Phil Lynott statue?
It's right near Grafton. It's right around the corner from the main part of Grafton in Dublin. You got to go. Now you got to go back.
Yeah, I got to go back.
That's the first thing I did was I went to Phil Lynott's statue.
Grafton, is that over by the library?
Grafton is the big, social center with all the stores and the restaurants and stuff
like
that.
High street.
It's where all the musicians played in once.
I got you.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's a beautiful statue. It's a beautiful statue.
Oh man.
Oh, it's bronze. It's awesome.
Wow.
Hair. Fantastic. All right. All right. Now, so Tom, now you have to ask me a question.
Yep.
All right.
All right. Who said Faulkner had the South, Joyce had Dublin, I've got New York? Was it John DePassos, Hart Crane, or Lou Reed?
Lou Reed.
Bingo.
Yeah. I was going to say that even without that.
Well, at least we had one that required a little thinking.
Yeah.
Because my next one doesn't either.
Okay. All right. Well, good. We're going to have a high-scoring game. All right. We are tied at one. Everybody has one.
Yes.
All right. Are we ready?
Yes.
What was the name of the band that played with Bob Marley?
The Heartbreakers.
You might want to hear the other choices.
Okay.
Who's Bob Marley's backup band? Okay, yeah. We know this already. Is it the Wailers? Is it the Melody Makers? Or is it the Innocent Criminals?
Oh well, we at least dragged Ziggy into the mix.
Yeah, exactly. So
all right.
That's another right correct question. Okay.
Right. Tom.
All right.
And this is another one. You can let me know if you want the multiple choice. Which band was created by David Grohl, former drummer for Nirvana, following Kurt Cobain's death?
I'm guessing it's not Nirvana 2.
Do you think it's Not a Surf or Linkin Park? How about the Foo Fighters?
Linkin Park?
Not a Surf. I like that one, too. Popular.
I'm out of the buzz bin. The Foo Fighters.
It is the Foo Fighters.
That's right.
Oh, my.
Well done.
Okay.
A round of applause, Tom.
Yes.
Hey.
Nice job. All right.
I'm very interested to see if Nick gets this.
Why am I getting the questions that require some sort of thought? All right.
Got to make it tough for somebody.
All right.
Who is the best-selling boy band of all time? Is it Boys to Men, Take That, or the Backstreet Boys?
Wow.
I'm
going to go Boys to Men.
That's incorrect.
I was going to go Backstreet.
Backstreet?
That's Backstreet Boys.
Take That? I don't even know who that is.
They're British.
British, yeah.
My sister loves Take That. I'm pretty sure that Robbie guy, I can't remember his last name, but he was in Take That.
By the way, Boys to Men.
Cooley High Harmony.
They star in Long Shot with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're still a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm no longer in tied.
No.
Jim 2, Tom 2, Nick 1. All right. You ready?
Yes.
What inspired Deep Purple's song Smoke on the Water? You know this one, right?
I don't know.
Oh, seriously?
No. Okay. Go ahead.
The fog on London's Thames River, the joy of smoking, or a fire at the Montreux Casino during a concert?
I'm going... Oh, man. Joy smoking? It's not.
Oh. Some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground. It was a Zappa show.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they burned the place to the ground, and they were across the river or the lake or whatever the hell it was.
Okay,
and the fire was on the other side, and the smoke went out over the water.
Well,
right. It's a true story. But you listen to the lyrics. Next time you listen to "Smoke on the Water," listen to the lyrics
because it
do it on the way home.
Basically tells the whole story about what happened.
Wow.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
All right, Tom, who was the resident band at Andy Warhol's factory? Was it Patti Smith and her band? Was it Blondie, or was it the Velvet Underground?
that banana band, the Velvet Underground.
That's correct.
It was,
in fact, the Velvet Underground.
Nice.
The biggest boy band.
Warhol was also the band's manager, though they had little commercial success at the time.
Yeah. You think? All right. Oh, you got that one, Dom.
A lot of Lou Reed references here so far.
Yeah.
In the game.
Good day for Lou Reed.
Yeah.
Okay. Which 1996 summer hit is remembered for its famous choreography? Is it Je Danse La Mia, Scatman, and I kid you not, parentheses, Stee Bop Bop Bebop Bop, or the Macarena?
Macarena.
Yeah. There it is.
Yeah. I got married in 1996 at the height of the craze. My first marriage. I told the DJ that if he played it, I'd kill him.
There you go.
And he didn't. We did play the chicken dance, though.
Okay.
All right. What does British star Adele use to name her albums? Is it her lovers? Jeez. Good Lord.
Wow.
Her multiple names or her age when she wrote the songs.
It would be her age.
That's right, when she wrote the songs. Correct.
And she's divorcing now? Is that
That's what I heard.
So another classic on the way?
It'll be a double album.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Jim, you got that right. Go ahead.
All right, Tom. Who did Ringo Starr replace as drummer for the Beatles? Was it John Bonham?
John Bonham?
Stuart Copeland.
Stuart Copeland?
Or Pete Best?
I'm going to say Pete Best, Jim.
There you go.
Thank you.
In fact, Pete Best. Pete Best played drums for the Beatles for 2 years. Richard Starkey, a.k.a. Ringo Starr, filled in for him when he was away or sick and replaced him for good in August of 1962.
Yeah.
Very nice.
All right.
All right. Pardon me for the pronunciation here. In 1994, Yusu Nadur recorded the hit song 7 Seconds with which other artist? Was it Terry Ellis of En Vogue, Lauryn Hill, or Nana Cherry?
What year?
94.
I'm going to say Nana Cherry.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Who is that?
Who's Nana Cherry?
Nana Cherry, I know.
Nana Cherry?
No, I know. Yusu Nadur.
Oh, man, I can't remember what country he's from.
Yeah.
He's on Us, and he's on...
He's the guy on the Peter Gabriel.
He's a Peter Gabriel. He's on Us. He's on the Last Temptation of Christ soundtrack.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so the score is Jim 3, me 3, Tom, first time, all 4 right so far.
Hey.
Yeah, I didn't...
Daddy needs a new Ford.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
In 1974, Swedish band ABBA did what to launch their career? They merged with a competing band, they won the Eurovision Grand Prix, or they played at the Queen's birthday party?
I'm going to go with the birthday party.
It's the Eurovision.
Oh, man. I can't believe you didn't know that.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Get up on your ABBA.
Yeah, man. Okay, go ahead.
Brutal. In the song Thunderdome, what does Tina Turner sing after "We Don't Need Another"?
Come on!
Is it Zero, Hero, or Jesus?
Oh, is that...
He doesn't...
That's for you?
That's for Tom.
Dude, this is from a Mad Max movie.
Hero.
Yes.
It is Zero. I was really hoping you were going to say Jesus, though.
I wanted to.
All right, and then last question in this round, and we got a break. Okay.
Last one. Last one. Oh, man. I just dropped it. Here we go. What was the name of Latino star Manu Chao's touring band? Was it Sierra Maestra, Bongo Bong, or Radio Bemba?
The first one.
No, it was Radio Bemba.
Okay.
Never heard of Manu Chao.
Wow. I have no idea.
So
all right.
Where are we at here?
3-3, you and me, we're tied.
Okay.
Tom is perfect with five, and it's his first time.
He's knocking it out of the park.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
You got it. I hate this game. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with more right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we are playing here. Jim Ryan is with us, and Tom Hush is playing along with us. We are playing a round of Music IQ. Before that, I just want to make sure we get the facts straight. Doc, who is the guy who turned his car over a million miles, it's the Million Mile Civic is a 2008.
That's amazing.
He did it in 10 years and 7 months.
That's incredible.
Isn't that nuts?
I have so many questions.
Yeah. Well, he'll answer them. He's Doc. All right. Let's recap the score. 3 for Jim. 5, perfect score for Tom. And me, 3.
All right.
So we're working from behind. All right. We're ready? These are the dark side of the card.
Yes.
Which is not an album by Pink Floyd. Thank you very much. Members of the band Coldplay met at which university? Columbia University, Royal College of Music, or University College London?
Of course, they'd get a Coldplay question. I'm going to go London.
You're right. Okay. University College London. That's right.
Just narrowing it down there. I'm like, well, they're from there.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Tom. Mm-hmm. What Herbie Hancock record won the Grammy for year's best album? Was it Gershwin's World, Speak Like a Child, or River, the Joni Letters?
Oh, man. River, the Joni Letters?
That is correct.
Yes!
We throw him a jazz question, and he gets it, Nick. It was the second jazz album ever to receive the distinction.
Yeah.
Lord. Right. Very exciting. The only thing I know about Herbie Hancock is Rocket.
Oh,
man.
And Stevie Wonder. That's all I know.
Open your eyes.
All right.
Here's a lob. Here's an easy one. Nick, which movie has much in common with the lyrics of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon?
Which movie has the lyrics of Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah, which movie has much in common with the lyrics of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon?
What do they have for choices here?
Is it Casablanca?
No.
Citizen Kane, which they spelled wrong with a C in Kane.
Wow.
And The Wizard of Oz.
It's clearly The Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Yep. There you go.
I'd like to see that Citizen Kane movie, though.
Yeah.
All right. What was the first commercial album to be released on CD?
Okay.
The first commercial album to be released on CD, was it Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, Tina Turner's Private Dancer, or Billy Joel's 52nd Street?
I'm going with The Boss.
It's Billy Joel's 52nd Street.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you know that one?
No.
Okay.
I would have probably guessed Bruce Springsteen. That would have been my guess.
That seemed like the era. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Tom, which female singer said, I love Africa in general, South Africa and West Africa, they are both great countries? Was it Paris Hilton, Shakira, or Britney Spears?
Oh, my God. I can, I know Shakira did that song about Africa. She did the World Cup song. But I don't think she's that ignorant. I'm going to say Paris Hilton?
Yeah, Paris Hilton is correct.
Okay.
This guy's...
Is he still perfect?
Yeah, he's still perfect.
Still going.
Yeah.
Man.
It's like Kurt Henning.
Amazing.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Which London club boasts the slogan, creating the moments people live for? Is it Fabric, Raffles, or the Ministry of Sound?
A Ministry of Sound.
Yes.
That was going to be my guess, too, but I didn't...
Okay. All right. Okay. Jim, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. What phenomenon is known as the Lang-Lang effect?
Good question.
A type of musical improvisation. 40 million young beginner students, piano students inspired by pianist Lang-Lang, or the positive impact on sales when working with Lang Lang?
Those were, I thought you were still reading the question. Can I get the answers one more time?
Okay, the question is, what phenomenon is known as the Lang Lang effect?
Okay.
Is it a type of musical improvisation? Is it 40 million young beginner piano students inspired by pianist Lang Lang, or the positive impact on sales when working with Lang Lang?
The first one.
No.
No, is it the sales?
It's 40 million young pianos.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, that's the Lang Lang effect.
Good to know.
Okay.
Tom, who said our band, it's not our band, but who said our band is made up of five ugly guys, and when you're as ugly as us, you better have talent? Was it Klaus Meine of the Scorpions, Lars Ulrich of Metallica, or Angus Young of AC/DC?
Mm.
Ugly.
Ugly.
Those are all ugly bands.
Those are all really pretty ugly dudes.
Scorpions, Metallica, or AC/DC?
I'm going to go for the... I want to say it's Scorpions.
It is not the Scorpions. It is AC/DC. I would have gone with the Scorpions, too, because Klaus Meine...
I would have gone with Metallica.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
No, it's AC/DC.
All right. What's next?
All right. This is pretty easy. In which city was the first Hard Rock Cafe established in 1971? Was it San Francisco, New York, or London?
London.
Yes, correct.
Good guess.
All right.
Is that a guess? I didn't know that
one.
No,
it wasn't a guess. It wasn't a guess, actually. All right. Who composed the four-hour piece, Music in 12 Parts? Was that Steve Reich, Mozart, or Philip Glass?
Philip Glass.
That's absolutely right.
Finally, I guessed one right.
Philip Glass. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
I had that one all the way.
Okay.
Which boy band was scheduled to appear in Star Wars 2 Attack of the Clones only to be cut during editing? Was it Take That? Was it NSYNC? Or was it Backstreet Boys?
I'm going to say NSYNC.
It was NSYNC.
Nice.
George Lucas is said to have agreed to the short cameo to please his daughters.
Wow. I had to sneeze on that one. Okay.
All right.
Let's try to squeeze these in. Let's get them in here.
All right. Which TV character does Isaac Hayes lend his voice?
Chef.
Yeah. Correct.
Let's see.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are we at?
Okay. You're at 5. Tom's at 8. I'm at 7.
Wow. Okay. I'm out.
Emblem of Chicago blues and American guitar player Muddy Waters played a key role in the creation of what? Is it rock and roll, the Rolling Stones, or the electric guitar?
I was like, it was the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Rolling Stones.
I had to think about that one, and I'm like, that seems too easy. Who said jazz stands for freedom? Get out there and improvise and take chances, and don't be a perfectionist. Leave that to the classical musicians. Is it Thelonious Monk, Dave Brubeck, or Maxime Gorky?
Dave Brubeck.
It is Dave Brubeck.
Yeah.
Thought I was going to stump him with the jazz question there to close it out.
Well, I mean, I can't win, but let's see what the last question is.
All right. What is the name of the language invented by Sigur Rós for the texts of their songs? Is it Hopi-Pola, Dreamness, or Hopelandic?
Dreamness.
No, Hopelandic.
Okay.
Dreamness was my guess.
9, right. He only missed one on his first time out.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
That's pretty good, Tom. I'm impressed.
Yeah, we're not playing this the next time you're here. No, kidding. All right. Jim, thanks a lot, boy.
Thank you.
Always a good time. We'll take a break. The news is up right after this. Two for Tuesday gets kicked off here. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Yeah. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That was Ike. Wanted to hear a little Sly and the Family Stone.
That's weird because that's from the 70s.
I know.
Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to remember, a little bit later on, we're going to remember Doris Day. She passed away. She was a legend. She lived a lovely, long 97-year life. God bless her. And she was a singer. She was an entertainer. She was a comedian. She was a terrific actress. She provided tons of very memorable work for us to talk about. So we're going to talk about Doris Day. But a news story here. Trouble has hit our favorite town of Springfield again. On Sunday night, The Simpsons wrapped up its 30th season on Fox, only it was hardly ceremonious. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the episode nabbed the series' lowest ratings ever For its 18 to 49 rating with a staggering 0.5. That's unbelievable. What's worse, with only 1.4 million viewers, it was also a low for Fox, who is already committed to two more seasons of what has now become the longest-running primetime scripted series of all time. And it wasn't like it was your average episode either, seeing how it was the season finale with special guests such as Ileana Douglas, Werner Herzog, and Jenny Slate. Perhaps they can blame Game of Thrones. Even so, the ratings decline should give Fox something to chew on, especially in the wake of the Disney takeover. As we previously reported, the future of Matt Groening's animated family is up in the air beyond the 32nd season, and the series may be far more lucrative off the air for the Mouse House. In other words, maybe now is the time to have a cow, man. Those numbers are unbelievably low, and a far, far cry from, you know, the 90s when the show dominated, did great in the ratings, and obviously the quality of those episodes were great. I maintain that between 1992 and 1997, the quality of The Simpsons was unparalleled, and it was, I think, absolutely, by far, the best show on TV and the most consistent show on TV. It was funny every week, and not just funny, but really, really, really hilarious funny and smart and just everything. And then it just started to stumble along. As we got closer to the millennium, it started to stumble along a little bit, and it just wasn't as funny. And now I haven't seen an episode. I mean, I seriously haven't seen it. I haven't seen a new episode of The Simpsons in a very, very long time. In years. It's been years. So... but we want to think about the good times, because The Simpsons did provide us, you know, with some unbelievably memorable television and some incredible episodes. So we want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite episodes of The Simpsons? Let's think about positive Simpsons stuff instead of this 0.5 rating that they just received for their 30-year finale. So we want to hear from you, and there's a lot to choose from here. And I'm looking at a list that was put together by a website. There's 30 of them. They picked 30 of them. And they said, it says, here's what it says. Anyone who had access to a TV in the 90s surely has 10 or more years worth of Simpsons quotes, characters, and episodes burned in their brain like a screensaver. You may not be able to quote from the past 10 or 15 years, and nothing could sustain that level of greatness forever. But we can still remember how incredible The Simpsons had been for a nearly three-decade run. Picking from the very best episodes ever is a task that even McBain would struggle with, but we tried anyway. If you only ever watch 30 episodes of The Simpsons ever again and need to choose an order in which to do so, make them these. And in this order, you'll effectively save the best for last, according to this. And they also preface it by saying, don't expect much after season 8. Which is sad, because it's the 30th season.
Yeah.
Now, you have already mentioned your favorite.
Yes.
Your favorite episode is Marge Against the Monorail.
Yeah. I think every time I watch it, I get such a kick out of it. I think it's so good.
My favorite is perhaps the darkest episode in Simpsons history, and that's Homer's Enemy, featuring the character of Frank Grimes, who they end up killing at the end of the episode, and all of Springfield laughs while his body is being lowered into the ground. I remember just watching that episode, and just my ex-wife and I were watching it, and when it was over, we just both looked at each other, jaws open, going, did they really just end that episode like that? And they did. And it's my favorite episode. I love where it went. I think Hank Azaria's voice work as Frank Grimes is fantastic. It's a great showcase of just Homer, just being Homer. Big laughs in it, really dark.
It's a risky episode.
It's a totally risky episode. And it made people angry. There were a lot of people who were just, like my former producer, Dan Chagrou, can't stand that episode. He hates it. And he's obviously a big, big fan of that era of The Simpsons, but he hates that episode. It's my favorite episode.
I mean, it's
a lobster for dinner. I live above a bowling alley and below another bowling alley. Oh, man. So, but it's a, yeah, it took a risk. All right, well, here's what the, we want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Simpsons episodes? There's a lot to choose from. There are so many. And like I said, at that time period, it was every Sunday night, it was the best half hour on TV. There's just every Sunday night you would look forward to it. There was nothing better on TV. So this is the heyday we're talking about, the good times, not where they're at right now with a 0.5 rating, but the great stuff. So here's something they picked. They made a list of 30 on this website, and it's digitalspy.com. They said Bart on the Road, number 30, Bart on the Road from season 7. And a great road trip episode in which Bart makes his own driver's license, takes out a rental car, and has an adventure with Milhouse, Martin, and Nelson to Tennessee. After watching Andy Williams in concert, visiting a wig shop, and missing the 1982 World's Fair by 14 years, they end up signing up as couriers to go to Hong Kong. And that quickly escalated. Best moment they pick, angry dad in neighboring car. If you can't keep your hands to yourself, I'm going to turn this car around and there will be no Cape Canaveral for anyone. Nelson slaps the dad's head through the window from Bart's car. Angry dad, that's it. Back to Winnipeg. That's a great episode.
It is a good
That's a really good episode, man. The wigs, when they're wearing the wigs, that's the part that I think that cracks me up the most. How about this one? Stark Raving Dad. Just 3 seasons in, this is from season 3, just 3 seasons in, The Simpsons was already big enough to feature Michael Jackson. But instead of the lazy celebrity cameo that we're more used to these days, he played an overweight white dude who Homer meets in a mental hospital after he's sent there for wearing a pink shirt to work. Leon's song for Lisa's birthday from Bart is still cute and a heartwarming moment. Best moment, Marge says, Doctor, if you just talk to him for 5 minutes without mentioning our son Bart, you'd see how sane he is. And the doctor says, you mean there really is a Bart? Good Lord.
I remember that one really well. I remember.
Well, I mean, it was a big deal, yeah. You know, to have Michael Jackson. I mean, it was all over the news. It was,
of course,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it was all over the news. You had Michael Jackson, who apparently was a huge fan of the show, mm-hmm. And to have him not disguise his voice. Well, he thinks he's Michael Jackson. That's the thing.
Yeah,
like the character thinks he's in a mental institution because he thinks he's Michael Jackson, and it's actually Michael Jackson doing the voice.
Right.
But yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one. All of these are good, man. Next one, Bart After Dark. This is one of my favorites of all time. This is real high on my list, this one, Bart After Dark. Marge and Lisa leave Homer and Bart on their own, but within a few minutes, Bart ends up working at a burlesque club. And it doesn't take long for moral outrage to take over the town, despite most of the gents visiting regularly. But everything is fine and well, once again, after a classic musical, a Simpsons musical number, which even won an Emmy. The best moment of that one? Do you remember the best moment of that one? Of that episode?
No.
Bart is working the door at the burlesque club. Abe comes in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Does
takes
the
off
hat.
His hat, turns around, puts his hat back on, and walks out. That is the best moment in that whole episode. That's a really, really good episode, too.
And that the gif of that gets regular use on the internet.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah. It's hilarious.
Whistling
in, he's all happy. Oh, and then he just turns around, puts the hat on, walks back out. That's the funniest part of that whole episode. And that's a really funny episode. I'm trying to remember who the voice of the madam was. The woman who ran, because I think it was a celebrity voice. I'm pretty sure it was a celebrity voice. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a celebrity voice who played the woman who ran the burlesque club. But the celebrity, I mean, if you try to Google celebrity voices on The Simpsons, you'll be here till next Thursday. So, all right, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Talk or text, what are your favorites? What do you think are the best Simpsons episodes from the heyday? 773, area code says, my favorite Simpsons episodes were all the ones that had Troy McClure in them. Great character. Great voice work by the fantastic, the late, the great Phil Hartman. You might remember me from some self-help. You might remember me from the self-help tapes like Smoke Yourself Thin. The great Phil Hartman. 708 area code. I love the episode when Rodney Dangerfield guest starred Mr. Burns' long-lost son. Yeah, that's a great one. That is a good one. It's nice to reminisce about the show when it was really great, because it was really, really great.
And the Madame was not played by anyone in particular. It was Tress MacNeille.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought it was a celebrity. I guess not. But they've had several celebrity, and I mean hundreds.
Oh, totally.
Of great celebrity guest work on the show. So, all right. What do you guys think? Your favorite Simpsons episodes? What are the funniest? What are the best? We're counting down from Digital Spy what they think are the best. And again, you're not going to see much after season 8, so which is unfortunate. But we want to talk about the good times and the great episodes of The Simpsons. 312-981-7200. Watch for Chicago's own very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mateer and Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
After a rough day for U.S. stocks, how will world markets react to China's retaliatory tariffs? We'll have the pre-dawn numbers, plus what every consumer should know about tariffs at 5:08.
The workday's first business that matters. The opening bell with Steve Grzanich this morning on 720 WGN.
If you're anything like me, you love a beautiful bathroom, but you don't want to spend a fortune remodeling or wait forever for your online orders to come in. That's why for all my bathroom needs, I go to Builder Supply Outlet. They always have beautiful vanities, tops, and fixtures in stock and ready to take home today. Tom, show me what's new.
Well, Lindsay, speaking of bathrooms, check out our new vanity collection, Newport Millstone. These vanities just landed in all of our stores in sizes from 24-inch to 60-inch.
These vanities are gorgeous. Dovetail construction, soft close. Doors and drawers.
Oh, Lindsay, you sure do know a lot about vanities.
I've been here once or twice before, but what I love most is this driftwood-inspired look. It looks like something you'd find at an expensive furniture shop, but at Builder Supply Outlet, a 30-inch vanity is only $3.39.
And now you can tune up your bathroom for less.
Builder Supply Outlet is located just 5 miles east of the Oak Brook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview, or visit BuilderSupplyOutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
If you own a small or mid-sized business and need capital fast, skip the banks with their fees and all their other hoops and call Lender. Hi, I'm Tim Roach, the CEO of Lender. If you're a business owner, I urge you to look at lender.online. That's LENDR.online. The first words you'll see are fast business funding for a brighter future. Lender is committed to helping small business level the playing field, giving you access to the funding you need with a simple, transparent process. Even with challenge credit, Lender makes it easy. And right now, if you need money, we're offering 0% financing for the first 30 days with no hidden fees. Hire, stock your shelves, take a leap on expansion. You win, Lender wins. Because growing your business is our business. Call Lender at 312-319-4769 or visit us at lender.online. That's LENDR.online. When the banks say no, Lender says yes. Call Lender at 312-319-4769. Lender knows small business.
Kentucky Derby winner Country House is not going to run for the Triple Crown. That means the Preakness Field is wide open, and you can get in on the action right now. Start playing and winning today with ExpressBet.com. ExpressBet has the best promotions in the game. Sign up today and pick your bonus amount, $20, $100, even $500. I use it, and you can get in on the action now as well at ExpressBet.com. ExpressBet.com.
The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech-language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At their clinics, you will receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare.
Just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, Sarah, Sarah. That's obviously Sly, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday! And obviously in honor of Doris Day. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. The Simpsons have taken a real big hit in the ratings. Their season finale was a horribly low 0.5 in the ratings. And it's the lowest they've ever had. But there was a time when that wasn't the case and when the show was the best thing on TV and had great ratings and a big following. And consistently, the shows were good. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about when The Simpsons were great. What are your favorite Simpsons episodes? 309 area code says, I will always like the shorts that were on Tracy Ullman. It's so funny to go back and watch those because of, you know, the way the characters looked then. And the voices were, you know, the same actors, but their take on the voices were different. Homer sounded completely different than he eventually sounded. But they were always great. That's how it ended up being a TV show, was because it was on the Tracy Ullman show. They were featured, the shorts were featured on the Tracy Ullman show, and they took off, you know. There was kind of nothing like that on TV at that time. And so that's how it started. 312 area code says, was Adam West in an episode? Yeah, he was a few times. He played himself. He played himself, and I think there was a crossover episode with Family Guy. Am I right on this? It was a crossover episode with Family Guy, and he starred as Adam West, the mayor.
Yeah, I know there was a crossover, but I was kind of past both of those shows a bit.
Yeah,
by the time they decided to do it, I wasn't really super interested. But I will say my favorite part of Family Guy was Adam West as Mayor West.
Oh, he was great. He was great. Yeah, he was great. But yeah, Adam West, this person says Adam West does killer voiceovers. He certainly did. Remember when he passed away a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and they put the bat signal in, yeah. in L.A.? They put the bat signal on.
God.
It was so beautiful that they did that.
Oh, Adam West.
Best Batman ever.
Yeah.
Best Batman ever. You know, mm-hmm. of all of them. Even Clooney.
Listen, don't knock the bat nipples. Big fan of the bat nipples.
That was a band I was in. Yeah, bat nipples! Yeah, Adam West. He was fantastic. And I really loved that that they did that tribute to him. I think they did it in more than one city. I know they did it in L.A. But that was pretty cool. All right, here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Okay, I think the Simpsons episode I really got a kick out of is when Rodney Dangerfield guest starred as Mr. Burns' long-lost son.
Right.
That was hilarious. I think that was his best work since in the 80s, because he was trying to struggle in the night. But I think that was his best work. And that was the episode that introduced me to the song, you know, Everywhere You Want It, That's the Way You Need, because they play at the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, that's from Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a callback to Caddyshack, because he plays that on the field. The man's a menace. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
Funniest performance in Caddyshack? Ted Knight.
Yeah.
Ted Knight, funniest performance in Caddyshack. And I know that's not the popular one. Everybody loves Bill Murray. Everybody loves Chevy Chase. Everybody loves Rodney Dangerfield. I think Ted Knight's the funniest thing in there. And I also have an unusual choice of funniest performance in the three, what I call the holy trilogy of comedies. I've talked about it before. It's Animal House, it's Caddyshack, Stripes. That's the holy trilogy of comedy for my generation. And my favorite performances in those three movies are not most people's favorite performances. Like, Ted Knight's my favorite performance in Caddyshack. Harold Ramis is my favorite performance in Stripes. And followed closely by Warren Oates, who is genius in Stripes. Uncle Hulka? And my favorite performance in Animal House is Tim Matheson.
Yeah, Otter's great.
Otter's the best. Otter is the best.
He's so funny.
He's brilliant. And I know most people go with, you know, with Belushi. Not to take anything away from Belushi, because I worship Belushi. Mm-hmm. Everybody in that movie is great. Everybody's funny in that movie. But for me, it's Tim Matheson, man. He's just so great in
that
movie.
He's pitch perfect.
Yeah.
I love my favorite from Animal House specifically, Donald Sutherland.
Oh.
As the professor.
This is my job.
Funny.
That's my favorite line. I'm serious. Yeah. This is my job. People are just leaving this thing. That is a great movie, though, all the way around. All right, let's get back to The Simpsons here. This one that they put at number 27, this is also one of my favorites because it features one of my favorite characters, Ralph Wiggum. Ralph is one of my favorite characters of all time. And it's I Love Lisa. It's the one where Lisa feels bad for Ralph because he doesn't get any Valentine's Day cards at his desk at school. And so she gives him the Valentine's Day card that says, I choose you. This was the moment that everybody fell in love with Ralph Wiggum. They say, well, everyone apart from Lisa, who gives him a Valentine's Day card out of pity. He soon becomes besotted and won't leave her alone. It's not long before she breaks his heart, but he channels his feelings into a performance as George Washington at the President's Day pageant. We still choose you, Ralph.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
But this always used to get quoted around the fraternity house when I was in college.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Super Nintendo Chalmers.
Ralph Wiggum, man. One of my favorites is when one of my favorite Ralph moments, and there are so many great Ralph moments.
Oh, yeah.
The best moment they pull out of this one, they say on the website, they say, the doctor said I wouldn't have as many nosebleeds if I'd keep my finger out of there.
Yeah.
Which is a great one. But my favorite Ralph Wiggum moment, and there are a million of them, is when when Bart burns down the Christmas tree and all the presents are gone, and then Springfield comes together. And he buries the tree and the remnants out in front under the snow. And then all of Springsteen comes together and gets them a whole bunch of gifts for Christmas. And then they find that it was burnt down and they, you know, mm-hmm. And so they become, everybody hates the Simpsons at this point because they gave them all these gifts and they really didn't, you know, they weren't, somebody said they broke, the story was somebody broke in and stole all their presents.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes back to school. Lisa goes back to school after it's all been discovered and everybody hates her. And so she goes into her, and I can't remember what her teacher's name is because I know Krabappel is Bart's. But anyway, she sits down and the teacher says, and she sits down at the desk and Ralph is behind her. Ralph is at the desk behind her. And the teacher says, turn around, Lisa. And she turns around halfway and you know, just trying to, you know, because nobody wants to look at her. And then, and so she's sideways, and then she's like, all the way. The teacher says, all the way. So she turns all the way around. She's facing Ralph, and Ralph just goes, hi, liar. My favorite Ralph Wiggum moment of all time. Hi, liar. All right, the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200, one artist, two songs. Who requested the Zeppelin?
Listener Tom wanted to hear it.
All right. So, welcome back, everybody. A little bit later on, we are going to be remembering Doris Day, who passed away at the ripe old age of 97. God bless her. She was just an amazing entertainer. And a sweetheart, and everybody loved her. Great actress, great singer, great comedian, great entertainer, and great activist too. She was a big time animal lover, and threw her hat in the ring to a lot of important causes. She was really, really great, and we'll remember her and her career a little bit later on. But right now, we're talking about when The Simpsons were great, because currently they're not, and they had a really, really, really terrible rating for their season finale this past Sunday night, a 0.5. Which is the lowest they've ever had. But we want to talk about the opposite of that. Back when the show was great. Back when the show was clearly the best thing on TV. And we're picking our favorite and the best episodes of The Simpsons ever. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Digital Spy picked their 30. And coming in at number 26 is Deep Space Homer. When Homer went to space. If a real person achieved as much as Homer over the years, he'd be the president of the world. One such example was Going to Space, a silly but brilliant episode in which NASA worries about the decline in public interest and selects a regular Joe to send into space. Homer is chosen, naturally, and of course, it can only mean one thing, utter destruction. That is a great episode. So this next one is one of my favorites, too. This one is way up there. It's Itchy and Scratchy Land, which is one of the best episodes of all time. There's no such thing as relaxing Simpsons family vacation, and the most epic of these had to be their trip to Itchy and Scratchy Land, full of stink bombs, arrests, robots going rogue and attacking the entire park. The tagline, "the violentest place on Earth," was pretty accurate. Park announcer, the funniest moment, they say, park announcer, attention, Marge Simpson, your son has been arrested. Woman, I'd be terribly embarrassed if I was that boy's mother. Marge, Park announcer, attention, Marge Simpson, we also arrested your older, balder father son. I think my favorite part is when he's looking for the personalized little license plate, the novelty license plate.
Yeah.
And no Bart, but there's a Bort.
Yeah, Bort.
And then there's a kid named Bort. Oh, look. And yeah. Then he says, hey, Bort, come here. That's my favorite in that. But that's that is a great episode. That's a really, really great episode.
That one, I don't know. I feel like I got to see a lot of reruns. I don't know where it was in syndication or if it was ever in syndication, but I feel like I saw that one pretty frequently.
Well, now it's on FX and FSX all the time. FXX shows it all the time.
Yeah, I remember when they first launched on FXX and they did the every Simpsons
every episode.
And I was in college and finals were over, so we just stayed and just watched as much Simpsons.
I'll tell you what, because they went chronologically. They showed every single episode. And they went chronologically. That period I'm talking about between 92 and 97, I stayed up all night and I just watched. You know, even having seen these episodes many, many times, but I still stayed up and watched that whole stretch. 630 area code, sending a text in. What are your favorite? What are the funniest? What are the best Simpsons episodes? 312-981-7200. Homer goes to rock and roll camp. That's a great one. That's a great one. And so many great cameos in that one. So many voice cameos in that one. I think Tom Petty's my favorite in that one. 708 area code says, my favorite was the one with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. That's the same one, isn't it?
I want to say so.
Yeah, you know, where he's teaching him how to sing.
Mm-hmm.
708 area code, the Treehouse of Horror skit where Homer is killing celebrities for ad companies. That's my favorite, specifically the part with Clancy and a mobster. I don't remember that one. One of my favorite Treehouse, that's another whole thing. The Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah.
Those are so great. The early ones are so great.
Yeah.
My favorite one is when Homer, and I'm at Treehouse of Horror, just single, not just full episode, but like, just like story, is when Homer walks through the wall at the house and he's in another dimension. It looks like Tron. That's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorites ever. And they actually do have a three-dimensional sort of Tron looking Homer using the computer animation, and it looks hilarious. And he's like, because they're trying to it's like a poltergeist thing. They're trying to like communicate through the wall to him, and it's like, what does it look? Where does it look like? Did anybody ever see that movie Tron? And then everybody goes, no. And then Chief Wiggins goes, yes. I mean, no.
I always really appreciated their version of the Raven.
Oh, it's great.
And they used to show that around Halloween time in my middle, when I was in middle school, because we had the closed circuit television and they would do the morning announcements, and they would always show some funny video. They did the King Tut from SNL a lot. They did Thumbtanic or whatever a lot, show a bit of that. But my favorite was when they showed the Raven, because, and I would get this tattooed on me. I think the best line is, quoth the Raven, eat my shorts.
Yeah. It's a fantastic episode.
So
it is a fantastic episode, and I love. I mean, Poe is my favorite writer, so I love what they did with that. I really did. That's a classic. That's an absolute classic.
Yeah, James Earl Jones narrates it.
But I'll tell you what, the that ending of that episode where he's in Tron Land. Do you remember how that one ends?
No.
He ends up in the real world, like animated Homer.
Yeah.
Ends up in a dumpster. And he gets out of the dumpster and he's like, ooh, and he's all scared.
What's wrong with
everybody? What's going on? And he's all, and it's like Homer's like making all kinds of sad noise, ooh, ooh, when he's walking down the street. But then he sees a store and he looks in the window, and in the window it says erotic cakes. And he goes, ooh, erotic cakes. And he goes in the store, and that's how it ends.
Oh, wow.
So good. 262 area code. Hey, Nick, I watched The Simpsons just to check it out, but I have noticed that they did step up their game because Family Game on certain episodes, they pushed the envelope compared to the old school Simpsons. Also, after Phil Hartman and Bart's teacher, Mrs. Krabappel, were no longer on the show, part of the rhythm slowed down. Well, you know, Marsha Wallace was on the show for a lot longer than Phil Hartman. I mean, Phil Hartman was killed about 8 seasons in. To the show, so it had only been on about 8 seasons at that point. But Marsha Wallace died not too long ago. It was just a few years ago. And I love Marsha Wallace. I love Mrs. Krabappel. One of my favorite characters on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
is Mrs. Krabappel. And this next one, oddly enough, the Great School Confidential, a rather sweet episode in which Bart acts as a reluctant gopher so that Principal Skinner and Edna Krabappel can continue their secret affair. Of course, as it's Springfield, this doesn't go as planned, and the whole town soon knows it, but they almost lose their jobs until Skinner admits that he's a virgin, and they kind of let it slide. So that was a sweet episode. That was a great episode, establishing that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one, Mother Simpson? We finally meet Homer's political activist mother in the episode, but only after he fakes his own death to get out of work for a day. After she arrives at his grave, she makes up for lost time with the family and having out on the run again, and creating one of the most genuinely heartbreaking moments as he waves off to his mom for what might be the last time, and then he sits on the edge of the car at the end, and there's a shooting star, and he's looking up at it. Beautiful. You remember who did the voice?
No, who was the voice?
I believe Glenn Close.
Wow.
I think it was Glenn Close. Do we have weather? All right, we'll break in a minute. We'll break in a minute, and then I'll do the weather after we break. This next one I'm kind of mixed on this one. I have mixed feelings about it. I will say that it's funny. It's Homer's Phobia. The Emmy Award-winning episode was the show's first to revolve entirely around gay themes, and was a big step towards mainstream TV promoting an anti-homophobia message. So controversial it was at the time that Fox Network nearly pulled it before broadcast. Homer is at first wary of the new family friend John, voiced by cult director John Waters, after finding out he's gay, worried that he'll have a negative influence on Bart. All is well in the end as Homer realizes the error of his ways, though Bart has no idea that his dad's concerned until the very end. See, that one was a little bit inconsistent with the way Homer was portrayed earlier. So that's why I had a little bit of an issue with it. So, you know what one of my favorite episodes is? I think it's my second favorite episode, and I don't think it's on this list. Do you remember Marge's Fear of Flying? That's got the best opening of any Simpsons episode ever. They open up at Moe's. And they're playing pranks on Mo. They put a cobra in the cash register drawer, and it bites him. I can't remember. Carl, I think, sets him on fire with his alcohol-soaked clothes. So they do these horrible things to Mo, and then Homer unscrews the top of the sugar, loosens the top of the sugar container, and he goes to make coffee, and he pours it, and all the sugar goes on the bar. And he's like, oh, look at this. You got sugar all over the bar. This is after being bit by a cobra and having his shirt set on fire. And they're like, how many people think that Homer should be banned from the bar for life? And everybody says that he should for doing this horrible thing, getting sugar spilled on the bar. And so he's like, that's it. We're going to take your portrait down from Mount Lushmore. And there's a whole bunch of New York Magazine inspired portraits of all the regulars. So they take Homer's down, and he goes, and I'm taking your favorite song off the jukebox. And Homer goes, it's Raining Men? Not anymore. And he takes the record out, and he flings it out the window. And it's Raining Men, and it hits Smithers, who's driving in a car. It hits Smithers in the head, and it falls down. He goes, ow. And then he looks down, and he sees that it's Raining Men. He goes, And then... So Homer's got to find a new bar to go to. He can't not drink. He's got to find a new bar to go to. So he goes to a lesbian bar, and it's all lesbians. And so he does that. That's very funny. And then he goes to Cheers, and that's when everybody from Cheers, they do the voices, except for Kelsey Grammer. Kelsey Grammer, ironically enough, Frasier was in the scene, but he didn't speak. And that was when George Wendt gets all, Norm gets drunk, and he's like, "That's it, I can't take it anymore." He breaks a bottle and is brandishing a broken bottle at Sam and everybody. And then Homer gets so scared, this place is crazy, and he runs out. And that's when he goes to the airport bar, where all the pilots hang out. And in order to drink there, he has to wear a pilot's uniform. So they give him a pilot's uniform, and then they think he's a pilot. They put him on the plane, and he presses one button and the landing gear goes up and the plane smashes down. So they get a free trip to go anywhere. And that's when you find out that Marge is terrified of flying.
Yeah.
And it's like, let me off, let me off, let me off. She's running up and down the aisle in the plane. And then she has to go to a therapist. And it's Anne Bancroft is the voice of the therapist.
Oh, my God.
And that's when Homer goes to Blockbuster to rent some movies that will make her feel better. But, you know, so he rents. He goes, you're going to love this. Hero, Alive, and Fearless. You know, so these are inspiring titles for the movies. And they show Marge sitting in front of the TV watching Fearless. The plane is exploding, and she's sitting there, and she's like, doesn't look tense at all. And they cut to a side view, and she's not sitting on the couch. She's just like bent over in front of it, like, you know, just yeah. stiff as a board. And then it goes on to, you know, and he's all upset about, you know, like he thinks that the therapist is blaming him for everything every time they meet. It's great. And Anne Bancroft is hysterical on it. That's a great episode. And that opening episode is great. And that's so many of the Simpsons episodes start one way.
And they just totally somewhere
else. And they completely,
else.
Like, that
totally
was like,
somewhere else.
Yeah.
To brown and black, the tyrant's face is red.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That completes the twofer from Zeppelin.
Yeah!
And it's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We've been talking about The Simpsons. They're hitting a rough patch here. They had some terrible ratings lately, but we wanted to go back to the heyday of when the show was really great and talk about our favorite and funniest and best episodes. Next one on this digital spy list is Bart of Darkness. This is the one of the best parodies of Rear Window ever made. The episode saw Bart stuck in his leg in a cast before becoming convinced that Ned Flanders has murdered his wife, Maude. In the end, it's merely Ned's plant who died. Meanwhile, it's also Lisa versus Martin in the Battle of Pool Parties. How about this one? King size Homer when he gains 61 pounds and he's wearing the muumuu. Oh, God. So funny. He says that he can work from home if he's classified as disabled, so he gained 61 pounds on purpose. Despite all this, he's still useless. It even uses a drinking bird toy to press the Y key to say yes on the keyboard, whatever the instruction. Of course, this means disaster until Homer, for once, saves the day by getting stuck in the plant's gas store. All right, this is always considered one of the most memorable episodes. 22 short films about Springfield, inspired by Pulp Fiction, Shortcuts, and the like. This one shows us more about the lives of the Springfield folk, although there are, in fact, only 19 scenes, not 22. Highlights include Smithers getting stung by a bee, the police boys discussing Krusty Burger, Lisa getting gum stuck in her hair, an extremely tall man mocking Nelson, and of course, Superintendent Chalmers coming over for steamed hams.
Oh, God, the steamed hams.
Yeah. Aurora Borealis.
And this time of day.
Yeah.
In this part of the country.
The thing I loved about that episode is that what they did was, somebody would write the first piece, give it to another writer, and they would only know the end line. And then they would write. That's why if you watch that episode, you look at the credits, there's like 900 writers credited because they let the writers write different. They didn't know what came before it. None of the writers knew what came before it. That's why it's just such a surreal and weird episode. Homer Badman. Homer may be lazy and a selfish buffoon, but he's not a sleazebag most of the time. Here, he innocently rips a yummy sweet off the bottom of his babysitter, I remember this one, only for her to assume that he was trying to touch her up. After dealing with an angry mob and a stitch-up appearance on Rock Bottom, it's down to groundskeeper Willie to save his bacon, thanks to Willie's Peeping Tom hobby. So, and there you go. All right. Let's take a break here for the news. When we come back, we'll talk more. What are your favorite Simpsons episodes back when the show was really, really great? There are so many of them. 312-981-7200. All right. News is up after this.
The open. I think I saw an angel just walk by. Hey, the gates of heaven must be open. I think I saw an angel just walk by.
All right.
I heard a blind man screaming.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. And that's a twofer. Who requested that?
That was Sam. Wanted to hear Little Buddy Guy.
All right, Little Buddy Guy. Here another one for Two for Tuesday. All right, we have been talking about The Simpsons, and unfortunately, the ratings for The Simpsons have been really, really low. This past Sunday was their season finale. And it had a terrible rating of 0.5, but they're in the heyday of this show, like between maybe 92 and 97, there wasn't a better show on TV. And it was, it was great at that time. So we're remembering the good stuff. So, what are your favorite episodes of The Simpsons? 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you want to join us for great Simpsons episodes. All right, let's see. When Marge, it's 773 area code, says when Marge is into lifting weights and she gets buffed up. Oh, I remember that one, yeah. 847 area code, Homer Palooza with Billy Corgan smashing pumpkins. Homer Simpson smiling politely. That's a classic. Chris from Madison. 630 area code, agrees with Tom. Monorail is my all-time favorite. And the one where Homer uses Demoxidil to grow his hair back. Oh, that's a really good one. I totally forgot about that one. Let's see. 630 area code says, Charles Bronson as Andy Griffith on the Sherry Bobbins episode. I'm going to Emmett's Fix-It Shop to fix Emmett. 708 area code, my favorite Simpsons episode, the Ramones sing happy birthday to Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns then orders Smithers to kill the Rolling Stones. Hans Molman, another great character. Hans Molman, another great character, saying, I was saying Boo Earns. And 312 area code, favorite Simpsons episode, Cape Fear. Yeah. Sideshow Bob episodes are always good. Always good. You can always count on a lot of big laughs when Sideshow Bob shows up. All right, here's some more to round this out. Radioactive Man, Bart's favorite superhero, gets his own film, and lo and behold, it's being filmed in Springfield, and it's starring McBain, Rainier Wolfcastle. Sadly for him, Milhouse gets the part of his sidekick, Fallout Boy, but his friend hates acting. It's not long before the production is bankrupt, and they leave and head back to Hollywood forever. Next up, the Springfield Files, featuring not only Leonard Nimoy, but also David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. At the height of the X-Files' popularity, this spooky episode saw Homer come face-to-face with an alien, or so he thought. He was really drunk. After convincing the entire town, it turns out to be Mr. Burns having undergone longevity treatment in order to cheat death. Even Chewbacca was in town to celebrate the alien call for peace and love. That is a fantastic episode. That is fantastic. How about this? Lisa the Vegetarian. Another great episode. After bonding with a lamb at a petting zoo, Lisa decides to become a vegetarian, much to the horror of her meat-loving dad. What follows is a battle of words between the two, which peaks when she ruins his barbecue by sending his prized pig airborne. But thanks to Paul and Linda McCartney, who only agreed to appear if Lisa would remain a vegetarian forever, she learns to accept other people's beliefs and reconciles with Homer via a veggie back ride home. That's got one of my favorite pieces of dialogue. Tom, I know you can probably find it online. It's the one where he's asking, where Lisa, you know, says she's going to be a vegetarian, she's never going to eat meat again, and he asks her, "What about bacon? What about pork chops? What about he says the pig. It's the oh yeah sure." Yeah, sure, Lisa. It's a magical, wonderful, magical animal. Because she says they all come from the same animal. That's my favorite line in the entire episode. So I think you can probably find that one. Until then, let me talk to Roger on WGN. Go ahead, Roger.
And my favorite one is, I don't remember how they got into this situation, but Ernest Borgnine. It was a Boy Scout or a camping trip.
Oh, right.
And they get stuck. They're right. in the boat, and somehow Homer loses the oars, and they end up drifting out at sea.
Right.
And somehow they get back to the end. My favorite line in the movie is, he stole a pocket knife from Ernest Borgnine. And he blinked. And then at the end of the episode, he goes, Homer had to do something with the knife to save something, and he says, don't thank me, thank the knife.
Right, and that's the Ernest Borgnine, yeah. That's hilarious. Right. That's hilarious. Right. That's a great episode.
What about the one where Homer had the lobster, pinchy?
Oh, yeah.
And he ends up eating it, and he's crying as he's eating the lobster. He's so delicious.
Yeah, he's so delicious, and he's crying as he's eating the lobster. I also liked when he had the helper monkey. When he had the monkey, and then like he was feeding him all kinds of terrible food and drinking and stuff, and he's laying there, he's all fat. The monkey's all fat. And he's laying on the floor going. And she goes, he's like the monkey can't move. And Homer says, well, "What do you expect? His cholesterol is through the roof."
You know what? Those first 5 years.
Yeah,
I'm pretty. It's the writing. It's
brilliant.
Brilliant. I think. Conan was there at the time.
Yeah, Conan spent, I think, 3 years writing for The Simpsons. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Roger. Thanks, buddy.
Sure, buddy.
All right.
His cholesterol is through the roof.
What do you expect? His cholesterol is through the roof. And he's just a monkey. He's got a vest on going, ah. He's got the little hat on.
Yeah. I've got that.
You got it. All right, here we go.
Are you saying you're never going to eat any animal again? What about bacon?
No.
Ham?
No.
Pork chop?
Dad, those all come from the same animal.
Yeah, right. He's a wonderful, magical animal.
That's one of my favorite lines. That's one of my favorite lines in Simpsons history. And the pig is the best animal to eat. As far as I'm concerned, it is a magical animal.
You can do a lot with it.
All right, here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Yes, the episode with Marge and the bowling instructor inspired a real-life media prank. Someone sent a letter to Ask Ann Landers saying, my husband Homer never pays attention to me. I'm thinking of having an affair with this bowling instructor. And it was signed Marge from Springfield. She had no idea that it was The Simpsons, and she answered it in the newspaper.
That's hilarious. I never heard that before.
Yep. And I mean, it was in hundreds of newspapers across the country. And finally someone said, yeah, that's an episode of The Simpsons.
Wow.
I mean, Marge from Springfield.
Marge from Springfield. That's great. All right, John, thanks. I'd never heard that before. That's fantastic. And of course, you know who the bowling instructor was, right?
Remind me.
Albert Brooks.
Yep. Yeah, man.
He was also Scorpio. He was also the Bond villain. I think he did voices. Well, I mean, he and James L. Brooks are, you know, obviously really tight.
Yeah.
But I think he did voices several times, but he never used his real name. I think he was A. Brooks on one of them, but he was never, I think he had a different, like he used a pseudonym or something. But yeah, that was the bowling instructor was Albert Brooks. All right. Let's see. Here we go. Coming in at number 12 is my favorite episode. Coming in at number 12 is Homer's Enemy with Frank Grimes. Here's what they say about it. Probably the darkest ever Simpsons episode. The power plant's latest employee, Frank Grimes, becomes increasingly angry with an oblivious Homer for his lazy behavior yet comfortable existence. Soon, after declaring himself Homer's enemy, he is electrocuted to death while temporarily going insane and mocking Homer. Even then, Homer falls asleep at the funeral. It may not be the last we see of Grimey, though. And the entire town is that's a Homer. And then they're all laughing as Frank Grimes is being lowered into the ground. Again, stunning when I first saw it. And I haven't watched the last episode of The Simpsons I watched was a couple of years ago. And it was a Treehouse of Horror because they said Frank Grimes was coming back. They were bringing Frank Grimes back. And I was like, well, I got to watch it now. And he's just in the opening credits as a ghost. Doesn't even have any lines or anything. And so I watched it. And I'm like, what?
What's the episode where I just remember this shot from it where Oh my God, why can't I remember the bartender's name right
Mo.
Now? Mo. Yeah. Mo goes, like, strips down to his boxers, puts his head in the oven, and just has a sign on his back says, no funeral.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember where that, but that, I totally remember
it. I'm like, that's one of the darkest things I've ever seen on television.
No funeral.
God. Oh, man.
All right, let's take a break. We've got a few more to talk about. We're in the top 11 on the website's choice, and I'll tell you right now, the top 11 is a classic. Number 11 is an absolute classic that I'm surprised, to be quite frank, I'm really surprised that this one didn't get mentioned yet. The next one that I'm going to mention after the break. So we're going to break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and wrap up the conversation about The Simpsons best episodes, 312-981-7200. And then after 4:30, we're going to remember the great Doris Day.
Woman, you must be stoned down crazy.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Buddy Guy. And that's the last of that twofer. We got one more twofer to go. And I believe my father made a request. So, all right. We'll get to that in a little bit. Right now, though, we're wrapping up the conversation about The Simpsons. The Simpsons have hit hard times lately, but there was a time when it was like at the top of its game, one of the greatest shows of all time, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the really, really funny, hilarious episodes, your favorites. So I said before the break that number 11 on this list from DigitalSpy.com is a classic, and that, of course, is Mr. Plow, which is one of the funniest. Admit it, you can sing the entire Mr. Plow jingle, can't you? This episode painted Barney as the villain for once, as he quickly put Homer out of business after stealing his idea for plowing people's driveways. After a fierce back and forth, things go back to normal, but Homer will always have that special Mr. Plow jacket. Yeah, they show that every once in a while. Here's where yours comes in, number 10. Yours comes in at number 10. Mine's number 12, yours is at number 10.
Nice.
Marge versus the Monorail, another episode featuring Leonard Nimoy, and it's another winner after Mr. Burns is forced to pay the town $3 million. despite his attempts to fool them as Mr. Shrub, Springfield impulsively buys a faulty monorail following a legit-sounding song and dance number by con man Lyle Lanley. Voiced, of course, by the great Phil Hartman. Just as it looked like the town was doomed once more, it's up to Homer and Bart and a donut shop to save the day. All right. 9, Homer at the bat. This is when they got the softball team, the baseball team together, and they got Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs, Ken Griffey Jr., Steve Sachs, Ozzie Smith, Jose Canseco, Don Mattingly, Daryl Strawberry. They were all in the band. They were all in this episode, and they were going to play for Mr. Burns' baseball team. And the funniest moment is when where Bart and Lisa are yelling Daryl, and I think it was Marge who says you shouldn't do that. That's mean. He's like, oh, he's a baseball player. He's used to this. And they cut to Daryl Strawberry, and he's crying. He's in the field crying. come here, number 8. 8 is Cape Fear. Out of all the Sideshow Bob trying to murder Bart episodes, this is the ultimate. The Simpsons are put into a witness protection program as the Thompsons, although Homer couldn't quite understand the change. Bob still finds them. How many rakes does he step on in that episode? How many rakes does Sideshow Bob step on and smacked in the mouth with the handle? Last Exit to Springfield is number 7. So many classic moments in this episode. It even has a bit of a political message. Mr. Burns takes away his workers' union dental plan in exchange for a keg of beer at their meetings. But when Homer discovers he'll need to pay for Lisa's braces, he accidentally takes a stand and becomes a union leader. It's one of the best Mr. Burns-led episodes, especially when he gets annoyed with his monkeys writing dodgy Shakespeare knockoffs.
It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times.
Yeah. You know which one I haven't seen here is the one where Homer... Oh, God, this is a great episode, and I have not seen it. Hasn't been mentioned, where Homer becomes the president of the garbage. Like he's the guy who removes the garbage.
Oh yeah.
And they have to move the entire. Remember, they move all of Springfield at the end. But the best part of that is it's Steve Martin is the commissioner, the garbage, the voice of the garbage commissioner, and he comes out at the end after the town is just a mess because Homer's been burying garbage underneath the ground. It's been bubbling up and ruining all of Springfield. And they have a meeting, and he comes out, the commissioner, voiced by Steve Martin, and he goes, "Screw you all, screw you, good night." And he walks off and doesn't help them. And what they play the Sanford and Son theme. The band is playing the same. Now, do you know the story behind that?
No.
Oh, okay. So this is how deep they went as on a reference here. Billy Crystal told a story about going to see Red Fox one night. And he was in Vegas, and he was like, "You got to see Red Fox. Go to the late show. It's unbelievable." Because Red Fox was unbelievably blue. And so Billy Crystal tells this story about how at the time, you know, he was on Sanford and Son. Fox was on Sanford and Son. So he goes. And he's at this casino, and it's a late show. It's like a 2 a.m. show, and there are like three people in the house. It's completely empty. So all of a sudden, the band plays. Ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox. Red Fox comes out. He's blasted. He's got a drink and a cigarette. He's clearly visibly drunk. And he walks up to the microphone. He looks, and he sees the three people, and he goes, "F you, F all of you. Go F yourselves." And he turns around to walk off, and the band goes. They play him up. That's the reference that they threw in that Simpsons episode. Jeez. That's how deep a reference it was.
Jeez.
How about who shot Mr. Burns? That's a two-part episode classic. Lisa the Iconoclast. That's where she finds out that that the founder of Springfield was not a good guy. Classic. Let's see. Lisa's Wedding. Beautiful. One of my favorite episodes of all time. The ending of that episode tears me up. It's so beautiful. Like, in the future, it's her wedding. She gets married to a British dude who is, like, you know, patterned after Hugh Grant, but is voiced by Mandy Patinkin. And it's about what happens in the future if she gets married. It's a beautiful ending. A really, really beautiful ending. It's a wonderful moment between Homer and Lisa. You Only Move Twice. This is the Bond episode, the James Bond-inspired episode with Albert Brooks. Playing the Bond villain, Scorpio, Hank Scorpio. And then there's Homer the Heretic. Homer incurs the wrath of Marge and God when he decides to skip church. This is a great episode. What a great episode.
Isn't that the one where they're just like, is that the one where they show the difference between regular heaven and Catholic heaven? Or maybe that's
I think it's a different one, yeah. This is when Homer just decides that he's never going to go to church again because he had the best morning of his life. Homer does return to church, but he snores all the way through it. And the last one that they say is the best is Homer the Great from season 6. A downright classic episode of TV, of any TV genre. Homer discovers that pretty much every bloke in Springfield, apart from him, is part of the secret society known as the Stonecutters, led by a man named Number One, voiced by Patrick Stewart. Homer being Homer, he is soon kicked out after unwittingly destroying the hollowed sacred parchment. But his birthmark, shaped like an emblem, causes them to believe that they're chosen, that he is their chosen one, only for him to abuse the power and get kicked out once and for all. So then the question is, are the Stonecutters still going? That's the question. So there you go. All right, some great stuff, man, that, from a time when that show just dominated in every way possible. Okay, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to remember Doris Day right after this on 720 WGN. I was your hero. Yeah, my dad picked this. I know what the hell is going on.
Your old man's got taste.
I have no idea what the hell's happening, but my dad chose a Sophie B. Hawkins twofer.
Bless him.
Good Lord. Two for Tuesday, yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right. Sad news. Out of Hollywood, we lost Doris Day. She was 97 years old, so she lived a nice long life. It's just weird because a few weeks ago I hosted a screening of The Man Who Knew Too Much, and she's so great in that movie, and it was so wonderful to see her on the big screen. Her performance in that movie is it's the emotional core of the movie. It's the whole reason that you become invested in that film. It's because of Doris Day. And when she's singing towards the end of the movie, you know, when their kid is kidnapped somewhere in the house, and she's singing Que Sera, Sera with such passion so that her son can hear her, it's the payoff of the entire movie. And it was just so great to see her in that movie on the big screen just a few weeks ago. 97 years old, and was more than just an actress. She, you know, was a singer, entertainer. She did comedy. She did drama. She was also an activist, a big-time activist, with the, you know, the treatment of animals. Doris Day, the actress and singer who became one of Hollywood's biggest stars in the 50s and 60s, died Monday after contracting pneumonia. The Associated Press reports this. She was 97. The Doris Day Animal Foundation confirmed Day's death, saying she died at her home in Carmel Valley, California, surrounded by close friends. Day had been in excellent physical condition for her age until recently contracting a serious case of pneumonia, resulting in her death. Over the course of her career, Day starred in an array of films. So if you guys, by the way, if you want to jump in here with any of your favorite Doris Day moments or favorite Doris Day memories or movies or any of that kind of stuff, her TV show or performances, we're remembering a legend, a true, true Hollywood legend, Doris Day. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. She starred in an array of films, such as the 1951 musical I'll See You in My Dreams, the 1953 Western Calamity Jane, and the 1955 Ruth Etting biopic Love Me or Leave Me. In 1956, she appeared alongside Jimmy Stewart in Alfred Hitchcock's 1956 film The Man Who Knew Too Much, in which she famously sang Que Sera, Sera, whatever will be, will be. You know, she didn't want to do that song. She didn't want to do it. This was, you know, she didn't want to do it. And it ended up being her trademark song. And it, you know, the Doris Day show started with that song, the TV show, and it became her trademark song. Over the course of her career, before she was a movie star, Day was notching number one hits as a singer. In 1945, she kicked off a successful run with bandleader Les Brown that resulted in several hits, including Sentimental Journey, My Dreams Are Getting Better All the Time, Until the End of Time. Even as her movie career took off, Day's singing success continued with songs like Love Somebody with Buddy Clark and A Guy is a Guy and Secret Love. During the 50s and early 60s, Day came to embody the epitome of mid-20th century American wholesomeness and virtue. As the AP points out, there was a running joke attributed to both Groucho Marx and Oscar Levant, who cracked that they knew Day before she was a virgin. Among Day's most famous films were a string of titillating yet innocent bedroom comedies, like 1959's Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson. Pillow Talk, by the way, is probably, that might have been her biggest hit. And as I mentioned before, you know, it was just this sort of sweet, you know, innocent kind of a bedroom comedy. I mentioned this earlier in the show. Roy Leonard, the great Roy Leonard, used to say this of his lovely wife, Sheila. Sheila did not approve of a lot of movies that were out at the time when Roy was covering the movie scene. There were a lot of R-rated movies and violent movies, movies full of sex, movies full of violence and stuff like that, and bad language. And she wasn't a fan. Sheila was famously not a fan of that kind of movie. And Roy Leonard used the running joke, which was I always thought was great. She didn't go to the movies a lot. And Roy would always joke that the last movie my wife saw was Pillow Talk. And that was always like a fantastic punchline for Roy to actually use that title as the one movie that was the last movie that that Sheila actually went to see. But Pillow Talk was a huge movie with Rock Hudson, 61's movie Lover Come Back, and 63's The Thrill of It All. Day received her only Academy Award nomination for her turn in Pillow Talk. But Day's actual life was much more tumultuous than her image suggested. Born April 3rd, 1922 in Cincinnati, Ohio, her dreams of becoming a dancer were shattered at age 12 when a train hit the car she was in, breaking her leg. Though it was while she was recovering that Day discovered her knack for singing. At age 17, Day married trombonist Al Jordan, but soon left him, claiming he beat her. when she was 8 months pregnant. Her second marriage to saxophonist George Wilder didn't last long either, while her third husband, Martin Melcher, ultimately made a slew of terrible financial decisions that left her deeply and deeply in debt. Dave's son with Jordan Terry, who later took Melcher's last name, would go on to work in the music industry. He famously turned down aspiring singer Charlie Manson when the Manson family launched their 69 Rampage, and it was Terry's old house that they turned up. And so he was kind of the target. He was kind of the target. They killed Sharon Tate and several others. This Charlie Manson thing just keeps coming up every morning.
I know. It's really weird.
It's just very strange. And we got the Tarantino movie coming out in July. Wonder who's going to play Melcher in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Around the time Day became aware of her deep financial troubles, her career was also starting slow. The sexual revolution was making her bedroom comedies passé. And though she continued to work through the 60s, many of her roles seemed plucked from the previous decade. Day reportedly had a chance to star as Mrs. Robinson. Oh, no! Really? As Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate, but turned it down because, as she wrote in her memoir, it offended my sense of values. Oh, man. Not that Anne Bancroft wasn't great, because she was, but...
Yeah.
Doris Day, I think, would have been really great, though.
I mean, you can't lose with that choice.
In 1968, Day starred in her last feature film, the romantic comedy With Six You Get Egg Roll, which was on TV all the time. As her film career came to a close, Day, much to her chagrin, found herself on television due to some deals Martin Melcher made for her. Making the most of a bad situation, Day starred on The Doris Day Show from 68 to 73, a successful run that allowed her to pay off her mounting debts. She also hosted a handful of TV specials, and in the 80s, even returned to television with the talk show Doris Day's Best Friends. Though it didn't last long, the Christian program famously featured an interview with Day's old Pillow Talk co-star Rock Hudson, who was then visibly suffering from AIDS. That interview is created with helping to destigmatize the disease for some Americans. Day devoted much of the rest of her life advocating for animal rights, while in 2012, she even released a new album, My Heart. In 2004, President George W. Bush awarded her the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In 2009, she was... received a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. So that's the life of Doris Day. My memory of Doris Day is mostly those, you know, the TV show. I watched the TV show, not the talk show. I never watched the talk show, but the TV show, the Doris Day show, the one from the late 60s, early 70s, watched it all the time. I had a big crush on her, too, on Doris Day, especially in Glass Bottom Boat. I remember really, really falling hard for her in Glass Bottom Boat, which was another one of those sort of, you know, that one's with Rod Taylor, and it came out right around the time when all of those, you know, the romantic sort of bedroom nice little comedies came out. But that's what I remember. I remember watching those movies repeatedly on TV. And obviously, I knew the song, Que Sera, Sera. The Man Who Knew Too Much, I didn't see as a young child. I didn't see Man Who Knew Too Much until I think I was a teenager, the first time I saw The Man Who Knew Too Much. And by that point, I was an established big, big fan of Doris Day's. And, but she was something, you know, just an important activist, an important talent, could do comedy, could do drama, could do everything. And I still think that her best performance is The Man Who Knew Too Much. Just such a great performance that it's you would expect from her. It's such a great performance. Mm-hmm. So it's sad that she passed away. She was 97. That's a nice long life, but, it's just sad, you know, that she contracted pneumonia and passed away from it at a frail age of 97. So anyway, we remember her. And if you guys want to jump in here with any of your favorite Doris Day memories or performances or movies or TV moments, she had a remarkable recording career as well. And you could go down a wormhole, a pretty fantastic wormhole on YouTube by watching some of her performances, both on TV and in movies. And if you want to rent a really fun movie, Pillow Talk is right up there. It's just a lot of fun. And I personally am a big fan of Glass Bottom Boat. That's the one where I kind of fell in love with Doris Day. So she passed away at 97 years old. We're going to tell you four great movies and a TV show that you can stream. A lot of the stuff that that Doris Day is absolutely available online and for streaming. And we're going to recommend some of those to you. And we want to hear from you guys. Your favorite Doris Day moments and memories and movies and films and all that cool stuff. 312-981-7200.
Lay me down to sleep, 'cause I pray that you will hold me dear, though I'm far away, I'll whisper your
requested by my dad, who is apparently the Sophie B. Hawkins president of the fan club. Two for Tuesday closing out this morning. We'll do it again next Tuesday. Yeah! Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich and the opening bell. It's 6. It's Steve Cochran with the morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Welcome back, everybody. We are remembering Doris Day, who passed away at the age of 97 a couple of days ago. Had an incredible career. Singer, entertainer, comedian, terrific actress. She was an activist as well. And we were remembering some of the movies that she did. Me as a kid, I fell in love with her, in like big time crush, in Glass Bottom Boat. And I think it mostly had to do with her wardrobe.
All right.
Yeah. Have you seen what she looks like in that movie?
I have the internet, and yeah. I'm going to take a look.
Yeah, take a look. just Google Doris Day Glass Bottom Boat and then hit image. And she was an attractive woman, man. Very attractive woman. And as a little kid, I was just sitting in front of the TV going, wow. So 312 area code says, many fond memories of watching Doris Day movies with my mom. It feels like she died all over again. I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, those were the kind of movies that you watch. These were on, you know, these were on a lot, like, during the day. You know, like, on the weekends, they'd be on like, a Sunday afternoon. It was that kind of movie that you would see on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, usually on, like, Channel 32 or Channel 9 or something. 847 area code says, I loved Doris Day. Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson was amazing. That seems to be the go-to. You know, I didn't even realize she got nominated for an Academy Award for that movie.
And that is quite a wardrobe.
Yeah. It is.
That generation's slave Leia.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. 630 area code says, Doris Day and Please Don't Eat the Daisies. Yes. Which was then turned into a TV show. And Please Don't Eat the Daisies is among all of those movies that she did, you know, in the 50s and 60s that were very sort of relationship based. And so, she was a singer and actress known for her wholesome, sunny screen presence. Day was a major movie star in the 50s and 60s, first as a dynamic leading lady during the golden age of the Hollywood musical, and then as love interest to rugged leading men like Rock Hudson and Cary Grant in several suggested screwball sex comedies like Pillow Talk and That Touch of Mink. As the public's taste in entertainment changed in the 70s, shifting towards gritty realism and adult themes, Day's popularity declined. She went into semi-retirement after wrapping up the fifth season of The Doris Day Show, the sitcom, in 1973. The five performances run the gamut that we pick here. And here's what they say that you should check out. This is available on all your streaming places. My Dream is Yours. This is from 1949. Day arrived in Hollywood relatively late for a starlet, debuting as an actress in her late 20s after a successful career as a recording artist and nightclub attraction. In her first three feature films, she played opposite the comedian Jack Carson, providing a bubbly counterpoint to the actor's slick-talking cynicism. The best of these early movies is My Dream is Yours, in which Day played a talented unknown singer who becomes an overnight sensation. Zippy and colorful, with lots of songs to showcase Day's voice and her winning personality, the picture hits a peak with a partially animated dream sequence in which she lead dances with Bugs Bunny. Another great performance for you to check out is Calamity Jane, which is a classic. While many of Day's early films found her playing variations of the same type, a likable young singer with a puckish sense of humor, she began to stretch herself in the 50s, taking on an occasional dramatic role as well as starring in musicals that were more broadly comic. She had one of her biggest hits in 1953 with Calamity Jane, playing the notoriously free-spirited frontier woman Martha Jane Canary. Day looks like she's having a ball, hamming it up in the Buckskins opposite Howard Keel's Wild Bill Hickok. The movie is also notable for featuring the Oscar-winning song and chart-topping hit Secret Love. Here's Lynn on WGN. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Nick. I have to watch this every year at Christmas. It's Young at Heart. It's real sappy, but she couldn't have been more beautiful. I think it more was spotlighting Frank Sinatra, and yeah. He sings lots of great songs in there, but she also sings in there. She was absolutely gorgeous in there, and I've loved her ever since.
Yeah, she was beautiful. She was truly, truly beautiful. And
a great voice. Great voice.
Beautiful. A great voice. Yeah. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
We're remembering it was a Young at Heart, another movie that that people watch on a regular basis that features the beautiful and the great Doris Day. If you guys have any memories of Doris Day, memories or movies or anything that you love about her, 312-981-7200. And they also recommend, it's the New York Times, by the way, who are making these recommendations of performances in movies that you can definitely check out online. And of course they picked The Man Who Knew Too Much, which, like I said, I hosted a screening of on the big screen, digitally remastered a few weeks back, and it was so great to see that on the big screen. And her performance is really, really terrific. And as I said, it's the emotional core of the entire movie. 2 years after Calamity Jane, Day performed another Oscar-winning song, In Que Sera Sera, in Alfred Hitchcock's remake of his own 1934 thriller, The Man Who Knew Too Much. In the new version, Day plays a professional singer who's on vacation in Morocco with her family when her husband, played by Jimmy Stewart, gets drawn into a complicated and dangerous assassination plot. Que Sera Sera becomes central to the story in a riveting climactic scene that gives the actress the chance to add layers of tension and emotion to the kind of character that at that point she'd been playing repeatedly for years. And the payoff is magnificent. Then, of course, we have Pillow Talk from 1959, mentioned many times as we've been remembering her. Many of Day's contemporaries joked about her prim reputation. One of the popular punchlines, as we mentioned before, was "I knew Doris Day before she was a virgin." But that image was essential to the success of the sex comedy genre that she popularized in the early 60s. The fun, fizzy Pillow Talk, released in 1959, is both the prototype for the hits that followed and Day's best movie. As a strong-willed career gal who inadvertently falls in love with the rakish playboy played by Rock Hudson, Day conveys both a commitment to bedrock moral values and undeniable yearning to be hugged and smooched into by a total dreamboat. The deep humanity of that character still resonates with women and men. Pillow Talk. I haven't seen it in years. I'd love to see that one again. It's been a very long time since I've seen Pillow Talk. And they choose The Doris Day Show. You can stream this on Amazon. It's also on YouTube, the Doris Day Show. In her autobiography, Day admitted she never intended to star in a sitcom, and especially not for what would end up being the last 5 years of her career as a working actress. Her husband, Martin Melcher, made the deal and then died, leaving Day with contracts to honor the bills and bills to pay. But while the Doris Day Show had a troubled production, changing formats and casts multiple times between its 68 debut and its 73 cancellation, that turmoil actually proved beneficial to Day's performance. Across 5 seasons, she played a character, Doris, in a variety of different scenarios, from a home and hearth widowed mother to a hustling working woman to a single lady navigating the early 70s dating scene. She compressed a lifetime's worth of acting into 5 wild years on that TV show. So, the true Hollywood legend, and she will be missed. Nice long life, though, 97 years old. You know, she had her hat in so many different rings, and she will obviously not be forgotten, and she's beloved by everybody. So we wanted to pay tribute and say rest in peace to the great Doris Day. She will be missed. And again, those are some of the things that you can see. They're all available streaming online. So, all right, we're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up. Hey, tomorrow on the show, we've got singer-songwriter Jake Pearson. We're going to talk to some people from the Glenwood Sunday Market. And, of course, another round of Tom's game show, Know Your Onion, where you have to tell us if the news headline that we read is real or a satirical fake one from The Onion. Know Your Onion. You get a chance to win some prizes, too. So that's all coming up on the show. Let's take a break for the news, which is next.